Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Happy Sunday. I'd like to read the list of sponsors and their dedications. Since we didn't have a chance to do it yesterday, I'd like to start with those that sponsored the Saturday teachings. Anonymous, may our joyful efforts to develop positive mind and practice loving kindness benefit all sentient beings. Anonymous, may we become skilled with using the Dharma when adversity strikes and fuel our spiritual practice. Aaron Sloan, for those affected by the earthquakes in Nepal, may they find peace of mind as well as care and support they need. Laura Carballo, to benefit all beings and continue to create the cause to meet teachers in the future. For the Sunday teachings, Steve Hale, in appreciation of our teachers, Venerable Amy, Geshe Gelug, Geshe Sangpo. Anonymous, may the words we hear help us to generate the kindness and compassion so sorely needed in our world today. Mike Flaherty, may all sentient beings know happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings find an end to suffering and its causes. May the Dharma flourish and may our Sangha and teachers live long and always be safe, healthy, and happy. Karen Mastroianni, heartfelt gratitude for all of our wonderful teachers. Diane Meyer, to my cousin. Walter Sheldo. And it's like Betty, whose love and blessings many years ago have guided me to this path, and may all sentient beings be liberated from suffering. Anonymous, I dedicate this to Laura, a kindred, kind-hearted soul, and her daughters, Eliza and Sarah. And Anonymous, may all beings have peace. Then, if I may continue, I'd like to read the prayer list. Prayers for a happy rebirth. All those killed by natural and man-made disasters, especially by the earthquake in Nepal. All the Tibetans have been killed or have taken their own lives in the struggle for religious freedom. Venerable Margaret McAndrew, Carol Bowers, Diana, Michaela Rose Duvall, Dr. Carlos Hoss-Weston, Emmeline Macklis, Bob Marshall, Ellen Meredith, Barbara Oliver, Maxwell Poggers, Eileen Rubin, Jean Vittem, Gracie the Cat, Monty the Dog, Sandy the Cat. Job Search, Roseanne Barona, Mike Brown, John Carroll, Lee Clark, Joey Gooch, Joe Griffiths, Jim Kay, Greg Weaver, Joe Whitley, Sandy Rimbish. Prayers for health and well-being. Kelje Lama Zopa Rinpoche, Venerable Thich Nhat Hanh, Venerable Gyaltan, Venerable Chirki Lamo. All those harmed by natural and man-made disasters, especially by the earthquake in Nepal. For the Tibetan people and for the Chinese authorities, may the nonviolent path lead to full reconciliation and religious freedom. Roger and Barb Alexander, Bernard Baranski and family, Jim Barnes, Luce and Narcissus Barona Sr., Benji, Yuki Burrows, John Carroll, Ken Castillo, Kitty Kauda, Ali Davis, Dimitri and Suzanne Diamondopoulos, Tashi Droma, family of Michaela Rose Duvall, Mildred Gooch, family of Dr. Carlos Hoss-Weston, Tracy Hoss-Thompson, Robert Harris, Christina Harrison, Leslie and Joan Inman, Kenny Jackson, Buddy, Dell and Sue Johnston, Helen Kasanoff, Nina Kowalski, Jonathan Kramer, Shanti and Kurt Latimer, Mary Lojek, Pat Long, R.M., family of Emmeline Macklis, family of Bob Marshall, Wilbert Martin, Michelle Matich, Anne McCall, Tom McGinnity, Alvia Mejia and family, family of Ellen Meredith, Bruce Miller, Charles Mitchell, Jose Moreno, Audrey Murphy, Evan Myrtle and family, Jay Pandya, Amelia Perkins, Drew Pledger, family of Maxwell Poggers and Opozo, Renee Reyna and Rivers, Ralph Rumley, family of Eileen Rubin, Patrick Shario, Joanne Cease, Pooja Shaw, Allison Sheely, Aunt Sheila, Jamie Sheridan, Patty Sheriff, Brandon Simmons, Andre Smith, Emily Smith, Nancy Sorbet, Carol Strother, Adnan Tokum, Lobsan Toptem, Francis Ullman, Basil Van Camp, family of Jean Vittem, Ann Walsh, Dion Washington, Elizabeth Smith, White, Suzanne Williams, Shea Wokowicki, Marguerite Young, Koki the Cat, Dorji and Kajo the Pigs, Gatsby the Cat, Pericles the Cat, Precious the Dog.
Good morning. Welcome to our third day of Dharma Therapy. I'm Donna Cease. I just have a couple of reminders. We want to turn our cell phones off or mute them. We have some beautiful casserole dishes and other containers left from the potluck yesterday. They're out here on the large conference table. Don't forget to take them home with you. And just a reminder that when we're doing question and answers, we use the microphone because we are streaming live and also recording the teachings. So it's helpful to the people who can't be here if they can hear your questions. And I also want to thank our many volunteers who helped make this possible, people who, a lot of them worked behind the scenes. We have our greeters and drivers and schedulers and a lot of people who put a lot into making this happen. And, of course, our donors who helped to make this happen, too. Just a reminder that at Kadampa Center, we offer the Dharma at no charge. But, of course, there are costs involved. So if you would like to make a contribution to helping us meet our costs, and it also helps us make an offering to Venerable Amy. There is a donation box right outside the Gompa door, and there's one beside the door to the into the building as well. And at the end of the teachings this morning, there will be an opportunity, if you're so moved, to offer a kata to Venerable Amy. It's most auspicious if you offer your own kata, and there are some available in the bookstore, but we also have loaners at the back of the room if you don't have one. Thank you.
you take the gold prayer book and turn to page 183, you see a mantra between two lines. That's Sakyamuni Buddha's mantra, so let's chant that three times. Tayata Muni Muni Mahamunaye Soha. Tayata Muni Muni Mahamunaye Soha. Please turn to page 34. In the middle of the page, you see the four immeasurables. So let's read that in English. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Now if you turn to page 37, down the bottom you see two mantras. So recalling the people on our prayer list and those on your hearts and minds, just chant Chenrezig's mantra 8 times, and then right below that, Green Tower's mantra 7 times. Om Mani Padme Hum. Bodhicitta prayer, and that's on page 98.
So again, it's always good to reflect on what you're reciting. So thinking a bit about taking refuge and generating bodhicitta. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings. Oh, Shange Chodan Soki Chonam La Jan Juba Jujai Nigyab Suchi Tagi Chin Ningi Pe Sonam Ki Chola Pencher Sange Jupar Jog Sange Chodan Soki Chonam La Chan Chuba Dudek Ni Kyab Suchi Tagi Chin Ningi Pe Sonam Ki Chola Pencher Sange Jupar Jog. Good morning. How's everyone? Doing your exercises? How's it going? So, what did you have any? Has anyone noticed about their triggers? What about coping mechanisms? What are your coping mechanisms for the negative mind? Eating, right? Other things, right? Healthy coping mechanisms?
Cleaning your closets
out. So one thing I also want to mention is busyness. You know, a lot of us are too busy, overscheduled. That can also be a form of laziness. So sometimes it's not enough to be like, oh, I'm just too busy to practice. I'm too busy to go to the teaching. I'm too busy to read the book. Because that just becomes another avoidance. So cleaning the closets out can be have a positive side, and it can also be laziness. You're procrastinating. So be honest with yourself, right? You know. You know when you're kind of wasting time, and then you know when you need a break. So it's also healthy to know when you need a break. And it's important to take a break when you're doing spiritual practice, and to also take a break in the rest of your lives. Right? So I know Lama Zopa Rinpoche, he's someone who, you know, when Rinpoche developed adult onset diabetes, things change and you have some illnesses and you need to take care of yourself. So at one time Rinpoche was at our center in a retreat, and I said something about Rinpoche taking a break. Like it would be best that, you know, that Rinpoche take a break, and then Rinpoche looked at me and he said, there's no break from samsara. Okay? So that is true. That's really, really true as long as we're ordinary humans. However, because we are ordinary, we don't function like Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who's kind of plugged into some divine circuit, right? So sometimes you get in his backdraft, you know, and you get a blast of it, really. But for us, we have to really, it's all about balance again. I mentioned that about balance. So please, figure out some way to bring in balance to your life. And, you know, be honest with yourself. Mark your time. How much time? Figure out in a week how much time you're spending on certain things. And notice if there's a big chunk here that isn't benefiting you, you can divert some of that. And I could probably ask all of you now for the next week. This is an experiment you can do or not, but I bet you could take 15 minutes just in 1 week and divert it from some activity that is a waste of time, whatever, and put it into some spiritual practice. Most people could find 15 minutes in a day. It's realistic. So just a suggestion, really, that, you know, to get it started. And I know the hardest part is that first step. Okay, and then sometimes a harder part is the second step. So what happens is, I know people, they start a practice. They decide to get a little meditation practice. They start in the morning, a little bit at night. What happens is they get it going for 3 days. The fourth day, they don't do it. They forgot. They're late for work. They rush out. They don't care. I don't have time. Because the pattern is not familiar enough. So off they go. And then they drop it. Okay. So why don't you just start the next day? You know, you missed 2 days? Just start again. You know, why do we throw it all out? We're so all or nothing sometimes. You know, people on a diet, on a health diet, and Monday, you launch out of the gate, great. Tuesday, good. Wednesday, you know, ice cream, looking at that. Thursday, I have the ice cream. And then that's it. You finish, you know. So start on Friday. Why is it? So it's kind of like that. Be honest and realistic and balanced about the spiritual practice. See, you miss a day? You know, people that do physical exercise and like to do it 5 days a week, sometimes they take the weekend off. Okay, sleep in one day. It's okay. So make it possible for you so that it'll actually happen. Because a lot of beings are suffering in the world right now, and they need you. They need your help. So because you're here, you have a precious human rebirth. You got yourself to a Dharma center, so you're kind of way ahead of the pack. Like there's tools here that can be so enormously useful for you. So there's a lot of beings that aren't ever going to get here in any form or any other place in the world like this. So it's kind of, you can look at your responsibility of really, you have this enormous capacity to help others. Incredible. you know, and to help yourself. So it'd be really helpful to try to figure out a way you can do that. Okay. So I wanted to ask you about triggers. We talked a little bit about this yesterday. This is a helpful passage in turning my mind from how the negative patterns also take hold, and then we're going to go into specific things about other delusions, and then we're going to also talk about emptiness, the nature of reality. So, and I got my marching orders. End. Okay. So, did anybody know, and I just want to ask a little bit, the things I'd asked last night, did people have a little time to watch your mind? Were you tired from all day? Are you able to watch the mind? Yeah? What happened?
I just found myself exhausted.
Yeah, tired. Okay. Sometimes it's tired, and people need to go out and just relax. And again, your maturity in spiritual practice is knowing when you just need to chill. That's okay. You know, it's smart because let's say you came back here refreshed. So, okay. And this is just one weekend. You know, if you want, take next weekend off or part of next weekend. But so sometimes we are tired, and it's good sometimes to just give yourself a break. But even in that space, did you notice any kind of, you could watch your mind a little bit more and things like that, noticing? Or some people just tuned out, tired, got tired? Anything else you noticed? Any little glimmers of insights last night?
I had a good trigger last night. I walked in to kiss my daughter goodnight, and I couldn't get to her. The room was a mess, and so I wanted to just do something. You know, my mind was in virtue. It was just normal mom thing, and then it was like I channeled my mother and just. And then I said, "Wow, that's like a great way to go to sleep." And then just found my way to her and said, "Sorry, clean it up tomorrow." But it was good to catch myself immediately and want to just stop that.
That's great. It's very great when you find you notice. Even if you mess up, but you noticed it. But give yourself some credit for that. A lot of the world is unconscious, not noticing. So please give yourself credit. Even if you fall flat on your face, but then you got up and said, sorry. So here's another thing. Delusion in Sanskrit is klesha. Klesha. K-L-E-I-S-H-A. Klesha. So when I was in this community in California, I was the director. When everything went bad, it was always my fault. When it was good, somebody else got the credit. So that's the nature of being the director of a Buddhist center. So we were having a community meeting we had every week, 15 people, and one of the residents who was not on the staff, we had this meeting to fill in the residents about what was going on, and some of them were the founders of the center. So a good friend of mine across the table just didn't like the decision I'd made and stood up and started screaming at me. Mm. And it was quite, she's not like that. And so I was really, you know, nobody likes to get yelled at. And I was like, whoa. And then she stopped midway and she just looked at me and she looked around the room and said, oh my goodness, I'm having a klesha attack. Okay? So it's a great way to be aware to just like, I'm having a klesha attack right now. Look at this. Okay? Without laying a trip on yourself, and you can easily apologize to the other person, but if you're Dharma practitioners, I appreciated it because then we could laugh. And I was like, okay, I know this. You're taking this very seriously. Like, this is important to you. I hear you. But then we could laugh and get through that. So sometimes it's like that. I'm just having a klesha attack. And it's special when you're, how old is your daughter?
14.
That's a special age as well. It's special when that, you know, my nephews, I was just amazed when they were teenagers, my sister's kids, I'm very close with them, but the room, it was just, they had two tiny little rooms with bunk beds, and it was just, there was no floor, it was just clothes and, you know, every drawer out, with stuff hanging over the drawers, and they didn't mind that at all, that was kind of their norm, so... At one point, they went to university, and then they come back for their break, and my sister cleaned everything up, all the drawers, everything, and they came upstairs and she goes, I have a surprise for you. So when they went up to their room, they were like, what? They didn't even notice. They had no... And within a day, it was all undone again. You know, it's just... And one of them, to clean, to do the laundry, they were doing their laundry at one point, but everything just went on the floor. So there was clean stuff on the floor and dirty stuff on the floor, and you couldn't tell the difference. And he finally just picked everything up. All of it came down into the washing machine because he couldn't. And she's like, what are you doing? He goes, well, I don't know what's clean. You know, so I'm just going to wash everything. Just so it's a different way of being, right, those years. Okay. So one of the things I wanted to talk about is attachment. Okay, we've spent a fair amount of time on anger, and I want to go into some of the more specific delusions. So, and let me just finish up anger, because we've talked a lot about it, I think. Part of it is helpful to understand the mental activity that's going on. And Buddhism gets very, very specific. And I'll even point you to, this is in your bookstore here. I like this book. Destructive Emotions. That's what we're talking about. This is a scientific dialogue with the Dalai Lama. And there's some interesting things in here, and I just brought a couple things I wanted to point out. But one part in here has, and any mind book will have this, the list of the six main, I call them six root delusions that are rooted in the three poisons, and I'm going to explain exactly what that is. And then it goes on here how the mind works. There's 20... Here it says derivative mental afflictions. Okay, so I just want to give you a sense, and then we'll go back a little bit to more specifics. But the three poisons are what? Some of you know this. Three poisonous states of mind. Aversion. Okay, we'll start with ignorance. And I'm going to give another name. Ignorance or confusion. Okay? And then branched out from that is... hatred or anger, and the other branch is attachment or desire. Okay, and those are called the three poisons. Think about these states of mind. You know. So confusion is one thing, but ignorance is a bigger thing, which we're going to talk about later when we talk about emptiness. And if you can get over your ignorance, and I'll explain, it takes a long time, but you can meditate, study, to realize emptiness, it cuts the root of all the negative mind states, all your suffering. And everybody in this room could do that, but it takes a lot of effort. But it's kind of like it's your freedom. Okay. And then what happens is, and you'll see, and I don't think you have a Wheel of Life, Tonka, here? Outside the door. Okay. So you could look at that. We will take a break because we finish around 11:30, so we will take a break in the middle probably. In the middle of the Wheel of Life, Tonka, the Wheel of Life are these different wheels. It's a big picture. And over top you have this demon who's holding the wheel. So you see his top claws, his mouth like that. He's kind of scary looking. The bottom, you see his bottom claws like that. And then in the middle, in the very middle, there's a circle. And there's three animals. So there's a pig, a snake, and a rooster. And the authentic way that the image should be done is out of the mouth of the pig comes the rooster and the snake. But often you see them chasing each other's tails. But technically from ignorance comes anger and hatred and attachment and desire. And so what happens is we get more into emptiness. I'll explain a little bit right now. Let's say somebody's walking toward you. Here's this person, okay? And we have karmic seeds in our consciousness. We have propensities, same word, or seeds that have been planted of imprints based on what we've done with our body, our speech, and our mind in the past. Could be this life or past lives. And they make imprints in your consciousness. And those imprints will ripen in certain ways. Okay? So let's say I suddenly have a negative cause was created, and now suffering's going to ripen and arise for me. Come into fruition, they'd say. Karmically. And what that does is with the person walking toward me now, right, I underestimate what's there. Ignorance causes me not to see them directly or clearly or accurately. And then the karmic seeds cause me to underestimate what that is. So here comes this person and now I don't like. Get away from me. Or I feel harmed or fearful. Everybody following? Okay. Then here comes attachment. And this is desire and attachment. And now somebody's walking towards me, and I have some positive karmic seed ripening of some kind of pleasure. Something good I did in the past ripens in pleasure. And now what I see walking towards me, I over-embellish what's out there. That's what attachment and desire does. It over-embellishes. But as a result of the pleasant karmic seed, I like what's there. And I want more of that. When if you really want to break it down, what you have is a fleshy oblong thing. Okay? And it's covered in a kind of material. Okay? And it has a hole here. Okay? So seriously, right? Then I've got this longer build, this thing, and it's got four moving things attached to it. So I'm breaking this down to the more raw data. That's what's coming toward me. Yeah. And that's kind of what everybody's visual consciousness would see, but then we all have our own interpretation of it, don't we? Okay. So is there really any inherently existent, concrete, solidly existing, permanent enemy there? Have you ever been in a situation where your boss is yelling at you and it's horrible for you, right? But somebody in your office is really happy about that? Doesn't that happen? So how is that possible? You're having a bad experience and you don't like the boss, but this person likes the boss. Yeah. But we make the boss to be inherently bad. The person at work you're challenged by is for all time from their own side bad. But if somebody existed like that, inherent existence says you're frozen in time. Inherently existent things do not change. They're always that thing for all time. That's what the nature of inherent is. So we're going to get back and talk about this. But it's interesting to notice what happens. And then what also happens is this being, let's say human, comes towards you. You got the fleshy thing, the hole here, the arms and legs, torso. And sometimes this opens and sound comes out. If you really want to break it down, you have to analyze like this to get into emptiness. Sound comes out. Yeah. And so interesting, some people interpret the sound as very pleasant. They want to hear more, and some people interpret the sound as horrible. Shut that guy up. Yeah. And you have people that are in your lives, and every time you hear that sound, you're like, oh. Yeah. And every time you hear that sound with other people, you're like, oh, great, yeah, let's talk. So interesting, isn't it? So we all have some valid perception from our side, but as human beings, we just have to understand that that perception is limited and that there's another side to the story. We don't have the whole story until you're Buddhas, until you have some high level of realization. I'm always having a limited view. But what we think is we are invested in our view and we think it's the whole view. We're right. Well, I just said yesterday about our story. So it's very liberating to kind of let go of that. You can watch your story happen, but now I'll watch it and then I'll be like, God, I don't really know what's going on for this guy. I just had a really negative perception, but maybe I'm wrong. It's very freeing that, to let go of that, to just dismantle your story. You can watch it gallop out there, but don't respond from that place, because generally there's going to be some inaccuracy. Would you agree? Isn't it like that? Okay. So I found this for me really helped keep me away from these reactive, negative tendencies at times. So you have the three poisons, and then there's six root delusions. Three of them are the three poisons. This is how your mind works. I want you to get, this is about getting to know your mind. Three of the six root delusions are ignorance, attachment or desire, hatred, and anger. There's three more root delusions. To those of you that did the mind course, what are the other three root delusions? Doubt, pride, wrong views. Thank you. Okay? So pride, doubt, and wrong views in that order. Okay? Pride we're familiar with. Puffed up notion, it relates to arrogance. Okay? Doubt's a tricky one. Doubt is not when you're here and you're not sure about something I'm saying. So discernment is healthy. Discernment, you check up thoroughly. I've asked you to please investigate everything I'm saying. Very healthy. Something you don't... Oh, feel free. My friend from last night. Welcome. So doubt can be very healthy. I'm sorry, not doubt, but discernment, investigation. You need to do that. That's your job, getting onto the Buddhist path. And as a Buddhist, always check up thoroughly on everything I'm saying. Doubt, however, what it does is you're not sure about something. You're not sure, and then what happens is you don't check up thoroughly, okay, and then it starts poisoning your view of everything. You see a teacher do something kind of funny, and you're not sure, and you came in the middle, you're not sure, but now every time you look at them, you're kind of like, I don't know if I trust what they're saying. I kind of walked in the room and saw this funny thing going on. I'm not sure. So it starts like a computer virus weaving through your view or any kind of recognition of what really happened. If you have a doubt, though, and you investigate it to the end, where you prove one way or another, then your convictions are much stronger. It's actually healthy to do that. And then the last one of wrong views. So wrong views partly relates to emptiness, the view, the nature of reality. And there's five different wrong views, but for instance, one of them is about ethics. You can have an ethical wrong view. So for instance, I think in the 1920s or 30s, or I don't know if people were clear about the ramifications of smoking cigarettes, smoking tobacco. Okay. So in the 1940s, in, for instance, Hollywood and things, it became very popular to smoke cigarettes. And cigarette cases, there was a market for lighters, and there was a whole industry kind of booming at the time. And you'd see how, you know, to have a Humphrey Bogart movie without him smoking a cigarette seems a bit odd. And at that time, it seemed very cool. You know, and then you got into the 60s and 70s, and suddenly they realized there was a health problem. And now I see my niece and nephew's generation in their 20s, and a couple of them, three of them, are really opposed to cigarette smoking. And when they see it, they're disgusted. You know, so if you think cigarette smoking is good for your health, that's holding a wrong view. Like that. If you think you are going to live forever in this body, that's holding a wrong view. Okay? And then what this book goes, and not just this book, I would recommend Mind and Its Functions. Another wonderful book on the mind. Mind and Mental Factors is another one. And these really lay out how these different delusions take hold. And so it's interesting to define them and know what they are. And then what happens is they branch out into these mental afflictions. So I'll just give you an idea. From anger, you have things like belligerence, resentment, spite, cruelty. Okay, so things molt, and you know, there's all these different, and what happens is to watch your mind, because sometimes it's not just anger in my mind, but it goes off to another section. Okay. And sometimes they'll say, even though they put this one under anger, jealousy, but I kind of feel like jealousy is like, you know, maybe two parts attachment, one part anger. Like it's a little mixed. Some of them are mixed. Okay, here's what you get from attachment. Greed. Inflated self-esteem, so being like an egomaniac, okay? Excitement. Concealment of one's own vices. Things like this can come from attachment. From ignorance, you get blind faith. And this is not something that Buddhists are into, blind faith. But just believe it because I said so. Mm-mm. We're not into that at all. Now, granted, with karma, because we don't have proof, until you get to a high level of realization, it's very hard to really understand the intricacies of karma. So you can understand all the characteristics and the motivation and how they ripen, how results ripen and things like that. That's okay. We can understand that level. And then part of it, if we are firm with the other Buddha's teachings, the things the Buddha taught, then I might say, okay, well, if the Buddha taught that, okay, because the other things add up for me. Makes sense. That would be as far as blind faith as we'd ever get. From ignorance you get laziness, forgetfulness, which I'll also call lack of mindfulness. And then here it combines some things. If you combine ignorance and attachment, you get deception and pretension. Okay, so you can see how, you know, so it's kind of interesting. I know I have some friends, they have all of the mental factors on the refrigerator. So they just, you can kind of, it reminds you of what's going on in my mind right now. And we like to hide and cover from some things. So one other thing I just wanted to read from this book, I like how His Holiness talks about just classifications of mental afflictions. And this book has a lot of details about the things. And one of the things he says, you have mental afflictions that kind of are more innate with your mind, that arise. And it's not with your mind, but they've been in there for long periods of time. And then there's some that you learn from parents and things like that. Okay? And he says there's those that you pick up over the course of a life. And he said they're like barnacles on a boat. Okay, so they kind of hang on with the boat. But he said basically they're separate from the nature of your mind. So as a result of that, they're seen to be adventitious. That means they can be gotten rid of permanently. That's what's exciting on this path. So some really nice things in here that, anyway, this is in the bookstore, so I just wanted to point that out. I also wanted to mention on a totally separate note, if you weren't aware, there's a book I co-authored they have in the bookstore, Buddhism in a Nutshell. I think some of you are familiar with it. But the nice thing, it's got some excerpts from Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa Rinpoche. But the back has a CD of me teaching the 11-hour course. So the organization asked me to do this some years ago, and the CD is pretty comprehensive. The parts of that I put in the book are very small, but the CD has much more in there. It takes you through the entire Lam Rim. So if you really want an overview, it's easy to understand on the tape, on the CD, and it's a good kind of stocking stuffer for people if they just want an overview to get introduced. So I wanted to mention that. The other one is Destructive Emotions. Destructive Emotions. How can we overcome them? Okay. So let me just finish a quick thing. And so if you really want to look at anger, how's it defined? Anger is defined as a mental factor that perceives its object as unattractive, exaggerates its unattractiveness, becomes antagonistic, and wishes to harm the object. So you always have to ask yourself, in relation to what is out there at any given time, am I underestimating or am I over-embellishing? Do we ever see anything as just raw data, just there, bare? Do we ever see anything like that with a fully open heart? Yeah. That's how His Holiness approaches. You see him with people. And like I said, it's kind of disarming to be around that pure energy, that the way he just interacts with it, like you're his best friend. So it's amazing. So we could have that quality with everyone. It's much more peaceful for you, much more peaceful for the planet. Yep. Anger is defined as a mental factor that perceives its object as unattractive, exaggerates its unattractiveness, becomes antagonistic, and wishes to harm the object. And what's helpful with each delusion that you have is understand the disadvantages a little bit. What happens with anger, there's a mistake sometimes, and sometimes we think it's appropriate to get angry. So I'm not talking about tough love or being a responsible parent. You know, your three-year-old is running in the street and the truck's coming. You are going to get back here. You know, that's different. That's different. Wrath is kind of different, to be wrathful. Slightly different, but it's always about your motivation. So anytime you're grasping and attached, we're going to talk about that next, anger, always check your motivation. Yeah. Sometimes you have a coworker, and I'm going to tell them how to, you know. So what's your motivation again? You may impart some constructive criticism or advice to someone if you have a good motivation. Okay. But suddenly out of pride or jealousy or you hate this person, you're going to tell them how it's going to be. You know, and the motivation, check your motivation, it's usually about me, how great I am. So, motivation is so important. Okay, so what I want to do is also, I want to go back to our motivation, and a little, just to make another third day of sitting time for us to get that imprint in there. Let me just interrupt for a sec. So let's go back. Let's just sit comfortably, as we did. I think we're all here in the room right now. Great. Find that comfortable posture for the body. We're just going to do this briefly, in case you missed it this morning. And once again, notice any tension you're holding in your body and allow it to release as much as possible. Think about how fortunate you are right now. Every perfect opportunity you have to work with your mind and clear out some negative patterns by becoming aware of them and enhancing and rejoicing in the positive qualities. And as much as you can, try to experience that gratitude for your precious life. And let that gratitude again wash through your whole system. Body and mind. And from this place of every perfect opportunity, take a moment to put your mind in a positive place. And if you can consider how much you can help others as well, please feel free to add that into your motivation and set a positive motivation for not only this time together, but all the activities of the rest of your day. And just bring your awareness to your breath. Just following a normal, natural breath. And if it helps you, count your breaths. Sometimes it helps you stay more focused. So one inhalation, one exhalation is one. See how far you can count before your mind wanders. And when it does, simply observe without any further elaboration. And with gentleness directed towards yourself, bring your mind back to the breath and begin counting at one. And please relax. Slowly open your eyes. So that space is always available to you. Reestablishing your motivation is always available to you. It's just a matter of reminding yourself, familiarizing yourself. So again, feel free to leave yourself notes or reminders on your phone or, you know. And an example is, I, years ago, was helping this center in San Francisco, and I made this decision to leave my career and live at this center, and the woman who ran it, the nun, offered me a room in the house to manage the center part-time, and so 2 weeks a month I temped at law firms in downtown San Francisco. And I had had this career, and it was really hard for me to be a temp. You know, sometimes how people treat temps, right? This corporate law firm. And they teamed me, I'd just come back from 2 years in India, and they teamed me with this lawyer who was, I would call, a little bit old school. His name was Ted. And somehow I just had this idea of what my life was supposed to be like, and it wasn't supposed to be, you know, doing this. But it was my decision to do it, and it gave me a lot of freedom, and they paid me really well. It was really easy work. But what he would do is every Monday morning he'd come out with his moldy coffee mug and ask me to wash it. And I didn't see that was part of my job as a litigation secretary, let's say, okay? So I just found my mind arising, underestimating him, what was out there, and just building this story. So, you know, I think by the third week I was just, and I was really making a decision in my mind, should I go back to my career and could I do this? And I wasn't making much, you know, I didn't have a lot of money as I used to have. And I mean, I never had a lot of money, but it was just more challenging. And my friends, some of my friends were feeling like, what are you doing? And, you know, you get all that pressure. So by the third week, I was really kind of bent out of shape with Ted. And but I was trying to practice Buddhism, start a little meditation practice with a motivation. But when he'd come out with that coffee mug, I had created this huge drama around it. I just kind of got whacked out. And I think I tried to say something to him once, and he, you know, but in any event, I would get upset. And so I took myself in the bathroom. You can do that. You're allowed to take, when I go in the bathroom, I'd be like, my mind is just a mess. It wasn't about the Ted and the coffee mug. It was about me changing life direction and what was I doing, and I was getting pressure. I wasn't supposed to do that. And so I go in the bathroom, you go into a stall, and I would sit there and reestablish my motivation. I just, first of all, breathed, because I could feel myself getting all anxious. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. This is a small thing I'm talking about, a mundane experience, but it became very big for me at one point. So by the end of my third deep breath, I'm already a little bit calmed down now, and then I'd say, well, I had a motivation this morning. This might be 11 in the morning, right? I had a motivation earlier about trying to get enlightened to benefit all sentient beings. Remember that word, all sentient beings. So it was, for me, it was all sentient beings except Ted, right? Because I hadn't signed up for him. I had left him out of the equation, and then I went, and Ted, you know. And then I had a little moment, this is all 2 minutes, I had a little moment of, what is it really about him? He was actually always very polite to me. Always treated me respectfully. Was a very nice, everybody liked him. He was a very nice guy, and he was very, there's nothing, I couldn't really find anything once I looked. This is why you have to meditate to analyze. When I really checked, I couldn't really find any reason, anything about him that was really a problem. You know. And maybe he had secretaries that's what they did, and they, you know, but I kind of came from this like feminist background, so that's like not something that you do. That's how I was trained. Okay? But is that accurate? If service to all, if it was my friend who was the attorney, I'd be rushing off to wash the coffee cup. No, let me do it. So why not Ted? Just these ideas you get fixed in your head. And so then this. So then I come out of the bathroom with a new motivation. I come out quite spacious. Quite spacious, it worked out. So I really did this practice with him for like a couple of months. I was assigned to him for a couple of months, and somehow it really was, I was like every day I come in, I notice when I get a little tweaked, and I notice, and somehow through this process, we became friends. I really started to value him. I saw the kind of attorney he was very ethical, he was a really good guy, he was smart. And somehow then we got to know each other. He'd ask me like what I did on the weekend, what I was doing, I asked him about his family. And we actually became friends to the point where I wanted to wash his coffee mug. So this is what happens. When you change in here, the external changes. This is what's exciting about the Dharma. So what happened is he comes out one morning, Monday morning, you know, I'm ready to wash the cup. I'm eager. Like, please let me do it. And he comes out and he's standing over my thing and he goes, oh, and can you, and then he goes, oh, this is disgusting. Oh, I'm not going to give you this to wash. And I said, no, let me wash it. Please, let me. This is what happened. There's a whole switch. So it's possible. And you always have that space available to you to go back and, it was really 2 minutes. I just went to the bathroom 2 minutes, like my mind's a mess. I'm like, what am I doing? Right, so please try to find that space in your life, even when it seems insurmountable, and that space is there. It's always there. The more familiar you get with finding that space and giving yourself a little time out, but 2 minutes, it'll become more accessible to you. And sometimes more readily available, where you might not need to remove yourself from the room, but I'm in front of somebody suddenly realizing I'm having a klesha attack. I haven't opened my mouth, but my mind is like, for me it was Cement Man, okay? Like I'm watching my mind having a klesha attack with him. I'm like, this guy is just a loser. I mean, he wasn't a loser. What's any more loser than me? He's the same as me. But my mind's saying this, these really rude things about him. He's a loser, right? But right there in it, I could catch and go, God, you're really having a klesha attack right now. Like, calm down. That's all it is just big cloud coming through right now. Let it go. Don't attach to it. Don't open your mouth from there. Just finished. So you get a little bit more, it's a little bit more accessible to you. So the reason we want to understand sometimes the negativity attached, the disadvantages of anger, as I was saying, is sometimes we perceive it as something beneficial. And I'm not talking about dragging your kid out of the street when they're running in the street. But I'll give you an example. I used to think it was okay to raise my voice on the telephone disputing bills with telecommunication companies. Okay? You know, you get a bill, your phone company, it was wrong, and you call and you get a clerk, an agent on the phone, and then you'd explain, and then they're like, well, we're sorry, we can't help you with that. We can't adjust your bill, even though I didn't have service. So then I talked to a supervisor, I can't adjust your bill, and then I'd raise my voice. And then through raising my voice, it appeared that the result I got was they adjusted my bill. So I interpreted that as the cause of getting my bill adjusted was to raise my voice and get angry. Mistaken view. If I got a positive result, my bill adjusted, okay, that is only the result of some positive activity I have done in the past. That's how karma works. Karma is definite. If you plant an acorn, you get an oak tree. You don't get a peach tree. So you do something positive with your body, speech, and mind, you definitely get happiness for yourself in the future. So if I got my phone bill adjusted, it's the result of something positive I did with my body, speech, and mind. What happens is the negative speech karma I had by raising my voice at the telecommunications agent will result in me having some negative ripening, somebody yelling at me, something like that. But so that's how sometimes we misinterpret and think, oh, anger is good. Anger got me the result. It's not like that. Karma doesn't ripen instantly like that, unfortunately, unless you're really pure. So you'd want to look at, a lot of times you see people angry, high blood pressure, face gets red, heart pounding. It's very uncomfortable like that. So you want to check up on some of the disadvantages. Okay. Basic direct antidotes to anger, we've talked about a lot. You want to think about the faults of anger and think about the benefits of patience. Okay. You all know patient people. I think they're much more pleasant to be around than angry people. Would you say? Right? It's a good quality. In fact, it attracts people. People that are patient. You know, some people are very enamored with them. Okay? And patience is one of the causes of having a beautiful body in the future. So if that's something that interests you, could be next life. Okay? Okay. Another thing with anger. I was talking to a couple people yesterday. Remember impermanence and death. Remember impermanence and death. You're fighting with somebody. It could be an intimate relationship you're fighting in. It could be the bank clerk, bank teller. Okay. If you're actively dying right now, you're going to be having this fight? Most people I know, I've done a lot of hospice work, most people I know actively dying don't have time for that kind of stuff. They're not interested in that mundane garbage anymore. So why don't we build that into our lives? Like some things are worth fighting about. Not really fighting, but some things you want to say your thing. Again, check your motivation. Check your motivation. With anger, remember karma. If I yell back at this person, it's just going to come back to me. Some negative thing coming back to me. And here's another one. Cultivate loving kindness. Cultivate loving kindness. So you're stuck with something, something's going on with this person again and again and again. Stop and go back to the visualization of a light at your heart. And the light is a jewel that represents all of your goodness, all of your good qualities. Okay, you have many good qualities. So please try to take some time in your life to start to notice the good qualities before you launch into what you don't do well. You have many good qualities. Place that here. Right? And let it expand through your body, light radiating out. Okay? And even to a cellular level. Whole body glowing, let it permeate all your mind, all your mental activity, all your thoughts, ideas, mental experiences. Like that. And then send it out over to whomever you want to send it to, somebody you're having trouble with. There's different ways you can play with that. Here's another thing with anger. Here, you're angry at somebody.
What if they're a mirror? Doesn't everybody reflect back to you? Isn't everybody a teacher in some way? It's a great way to see things. You can learn from everybody. Yeah. Sometimes we're busy, sometimes we're not interested. But the person that's really challenging me, there's a message there. There's definitely a bigger message for you. So are you open to hearing it, and are you looking in the mirror? Because it's just a reflection of yourself coming back to you in some way. Because that's another way you could look at it. If you're angry with somebody, you're having some altercation, do you ever do the stuff that they're doing to you now? Have you ever done that? Never. No? Okay. Now she's like, sometimes, right? So, you know, you're having this thing, but it's like, somebody butts in front of you in their car, and have you ever done that to somebody? Sure. Well, we get so indignant. How dare they? Right? And we get this thing about, they got into my lane. You know? Did you build the road? I didn't see your name on the road, but territorialness, you know? Got into my lane, how dare they, you know? So you're going to be what now, 30 seconds later? I mean, really, analyze it. Break it down. Because it diffuses this. Yeah. But what happens is we're used to doing this because we see others do it. We see others. I notice, like, somebody close to me, and be careful, when you drive aggressively, your kids pick that up. That's how they drive. They learn from you. And then there's peer pressure, regardless of how old you are. You're in the car, and your friend is aggressive and saying, come on, pass that person, you know, come on, like that. And you kind of get, okay, yeah, that's what they want me to do, especially if it's a friend that dominates you a little. That happens with people, and you get kind of caught up in it. It takes strength of mind to kind of say, I'm okay now. I was laughing because my friend came, and her husband and I worked together in Washington, D.C., in politics, a past life for me, right? But we worked for this wonderful Congress guy from Pennsylvania, and I had to drive him once to Northeast Philadelphia. It was a good hour drive to this rally or something, and he's in the front seat, and there's three reporters in the back seat having dinner in a big American car. You know, we needed the American labor, whatever. We had this, my dad's old junker car, whatever, was unbelievable. Slept 12 comfortably, you know, one of those cars, right? So anyway, we're driving, and I had never really driven him that far before, and he's a maniac in the passenger seat. Lovely guy. He's like, pass that guy, get in the left lane. No, get faster. Go. And we're a really dangerous expressway. And finally, I just couldn't take it. I didn't know what to say. And he's really very personable guy, and we had a good relationship. And I finally just turned and I said, I didn't know. Do you have a license to drive from the back seat? You know. And the reporters were cracking up in the back seat, and then he turned to me and he said, sorry. I said, that's okay. I think I've got it. You know, I'm okay. So, I think that, that's me. I've done that with people. Tell people how to drive. And the other thing is humor cuts a lot of stuff with anger. Humor cuts a lot of stuff. I just talked to somebody yesterday about their teenager. Okay? How many of you have teenagers? Right? It's special, isn't it? It's a special time of life, okay? So sometimes they're difficult. Not all of them, but sometimes it's difficult. So is there a way, when you want them to wash the dishes or do a chore, they have tuned you out. They don't hear the parental volume at that thing, the decibels. They're gone. And my sister would be screaming at her sons. Like, just get, you know. So they don't hear that. I used to tune my parents out. Yeah, we don't have to answer, right? So this goes on again and again, and what happens is they're used to how you're going to get them to do the same voice. So can you ever change it up a little bit, you know, and find some humor where instead of just saying, do the dishes, now you come in and you start tickling them or, you know, say, I know you don't want to do the dishes, but, you know, it's just something different because it shifts their, all of a sudden they're like, whoa, something different. So sometimes that can help, but I find that humor is a great cut for, you know, and then what happens when you're around negative people that set you off? This is a trigger. How many of you have negative influences around you? Right? Very common. And some people will say, well, it's not me, it's just my family's crazy. You know, these people make me nuts. And it's true. There's a lot of... So my dad, bless his heart, you know, I enjoy living with him right now and part of the year. And you know, God bless, he's 88, he's doing really well. Let's hope it continues, right? So, but what happens is he has a negative tendency, just kind of revolves around the world in a critical, negative way sometimes. So I, you know, having a good day, and then he'll come in with some barb that is just, and my mom, that was their kind of dynamic, but I'm not interested in that, having a lot of negativity around me. And so what I'll do is he'll say something sweeping like that, and I'll just think like, whoa. And then I'll just turn and I'll say, well, thank you so much, bundle of sunshine. But, you know, something like that. Make it, you know, I'll just say, that was just such an uplifting thought you just had. But, and then he realizes, and he'll stop and he'll laugh. But it, instead of attacking him back, I've made him more aware, and he's aware, and he realizes. And it's kind of cut a little bit of his stuff. I'm not expecting him to change, but he's actually adapted pretty well because it comes from humor. So I would recommend. And then we've also had things, this is just related to anger. So put yourself in someone else's shoes. This is the famous saying we have. Okay? This is the crux of bodhicitta. Put yourself in someone else's shoes. This is exchanging oneself with others. So we did a little exercise yesterday, that meditation. But if you can insert that so much of, you know, I want to kill this person right now. Well, what's their experience? Do you know that they had a fight with their partner at home? Their child is sick. They're having financial struggles. They hate their job. You know, often we don't know. We think we know. But sometimes we don't know what's really going on or how lost they are like that. And the other thing is I wanted to mention when we did the meditation yesterday and then I said, superimpose someone you like on the person that you're having a conflict with. How did that work for people? Superimpose the face of someone you like on the person in the meditation that we were struggling with, we were having a conflict with. Anybody remember?
I made it very good.
Did it work? It worked for you?
Yeah. It's very good.
Good. Cause, and one of the things I wanted to say about it is we have friends, as we make mistakes, our friends make mistakes, right? And I have friends that I love dearly, and they'll always be my friend, I'd like to think, right? But sometimes they do really stupid things, rude things, just like I do. So, but if they do it, I'm much more forgiving. I'm just like, well, you know, yeah, sometimes she's like that. I accept that somehow. And I might even say sometimes, like, well, when you do that, it really hurts me. Or, but I'm much more fluid with them. But somebody I don't like and the person at work that's difficult, I never give them any space to be who they are and to make mistakes. So that's what I found. Sometimes that was a little easier to just interject that, to find that. Okay? Here's another one. Check your expectations. Sometimes we have unrealistic expectations. Right? I find that expectation is the mother of disappointment. So really check your expectations. And that's why we get frustrated with somebody and upset. I had an unrealistic expectation. You didn't deliver. You know, what's wrong with you? You know. And then you never communicated it properly. Okay, so this is just being realistic. Okay. Attachment. Let's look at what is attachment. A mental factor that perceives an object as attractive, exaggerates its attractiveness, regards it as a cause of happiness and wants to possess and retain it. Okay, it's a mental factor that perceives an object as attractive, exaggerates its attractiveness, regards it as a cause of happiness, and wants to possess and retain it. Okay, what's wrong with attachment? Right. Nothing's permanent. Absolutely. Okay. It attachment disturbs your mind. Have you noticed or do you not notice? Yeah. Sometimes heavily disturbs your mind. Sometimes slightly. Sometimes heavily. Your mind becomes unpeaceful, unclear. It can lead you to do silly or dangerous things. Driving recklessly in order to impress someone. Things like that, okay. Your moods go up and down. You got the thing you wanted, you didn't, you know, great, you didn't get it. You're glum, okay? It leads to dissatisfaction. And Buddha said that following attachment is like drinking salt water. Okay? Your thirst is never quenched. And I find personally, with desire and attachment, the more I court it, the more it gets fueled to run. I mean, one thing I would say is before I was a nun, before I was celibate, sexual desire, the more I used it, the more I wanted to use it. Now I kind of don't really think about it. I mean, it's not that I'm beyond desire. I'm not. But it's just... I don't think it's just an age thing either. So, and it's the same thing. If you have a shopping habit, and there are shopping addictions. I teach addiction courses. I've had people come that ruin their family from online shopping. Seriously. But if you are used to shopping, and you're used to, you know, going on the internet, Amazon, you know, like, then you get a habit. And so that's something that you're going to probably build into every week and every month, that there's something, there's people that one of their therapies and one of their activities is they go shopping. So it's not that there's anything inherently right or wrong about shopping, but if you find that it's disturbing your mind where you need to get that, oh, you missed the sale, oh, there was that, or you bought two of them, do you really need all these things? Think about it. Don't we have enough stuff? And are you somebody, do you shop responsibly, meaning, I know people, we lived in small cabins at Vajrapani Institute when I was out there in California. We had small cabins. My neighbors, if they got a new sweatshirt, then one old sweatshirt went out. We didn't have any room to keep it. We just didn't have that much room in the cabin. So do you live like that? Or, you know, I have a friend that, you know, I sometimes visit her. She's overseas. I've just never seen that many T-shirts, tank tops, and polos in someone's house for one person. It's like a shopping mall. I'm not kidding. I've never seen shelves. She's just one person. How many yellow T-shirts do you need?
One.
You know, she has like 15 of them. But then she has T-shirts of every... And she has a washer and dryer in the apartment. It's not like, you know, she needs to go for a month and then take everything to the laundry. So, and then she's telling me she doesn't have enough space in the house. She needs more. So something, be realistic, and it disturbs her mind, the stuff. So whoever mentioned about the closet yesterday or the... So it's, you know, sometimes less is more, right? Your mind is less cluttered, something you can think about. Attachment gives rise to other emotions like anger, jealousy, fear, worry. It leads to problems in relationships. You become dependent or you become possessive. You have unrealistic expectations. And then, as you said, the happiness or pleasure doesn't last. When you said it's impermanent, absolutely, totally impermanent. Attachment can lead you to do negative things. I know somebody, well, I think they stopped, but they used to steal. They used to steal things in shops, from food to clothing, like that. It interferes with your spiritual practice, because attachment can distract you. You're meditating, and you're like, you know, pizza. Pizza. Hey, I was at Laudo once. So Laudo is really remote, you know. There's no pizza there, okay? I mean, there's potatoes. There's no pizza. But somehow, because of the... We eat a variety of food, Westerners. Asians don't. They tend to eat a lot of the same thing, often. We eat a variety. And at Laudo, it's a lot of potatoes and things. So after a while, 3 or 4 months there, my mind... You know, you're kind of... So I had pizza in my retreat, like in my sessions, this pizza came in. So distracting. So distracting. Like several sessions, I was like... And obviously it was telling me I was craving some kind of food. But finally what I had to do in a meditation was have a meditation where I sat down and I ate the pizza. Really. It was very... I just visualized eating, trying to savor what it would taste like, the cheese and the... And I just got through a couple bites and then it dissolved and it was gone. So sometimes you can do that. When you really, again, analyze and go in there, what is it about the pizza? Well, it's dough. I can't even really digest that well. Cheese, But when you put it all together, the tomato sauce, it looks pretty good. Mushrooms, maybe. Okay. But when I really got down to it, it was like a couple pieces and then like that. Okay. Here's some antidotes. So one of the things they'll do, if it's a person, traditional Tibetan way, I'm not sure this works best for us, is to visualize your object of infatuation or obsession as getting old. And visualize the fluids and things that go on in their body, bodily functions. They can smell and things like that. So it can be helpful to do that. Because we don't, when we're young and we meet a new person and all this, it's glory. And then when they're, you know, if you really live with them for a long time and you notice things in the body changing, not becoming so enamored like that, that can help as well. Meditate on impermanence is part of this. Meditate on impermanence. Okay? So you could actually visualize them getting old. You could visualize things going on in the body, their body changing, stuff like that. And the other thing is realizing that everybody dies. Everybody dies. So there's nothing wrong with having a relationship and raising a family. Yeah. But even your kids, and I hope they don't die before you. I think that's one of the worst tragedies. But everybody dies. So how wonderful that you get to walk along a path for a while with somebody and have a partner, a companion, if you have one. Nothing wrong with that. And maybe you can support each other in some life goals, whether you're raising a family, educating your kids, buying a house, having a career, following some spiritual path, doing retreat. You know, you can support each other along for a while, but know that at some point you are going to be separated. It's much more realistic to go into a relationship like that rather than the romantic notions we're fed from Hollywood movies that you're going to waltz off into the sunset happily ever after. You know, you can be happily ever after as a fully awakened being. Yeah. But it's not going to look like the Hollywood movie, you know, that you get to get the guy or the girl and it looks like that and you're always 26 years old. Right? That's just not realistic. But we've been a bit brainwashed by that. We have to really be careful. Yeah. So, you know, I was taught about Mr. Right. I was raised with Mr. Right. Anybody have that concept? That's how my mom, Mr. Right's going to come, you know. And then later in life, I realized Mr. Right looked like something like that. That's a little different, right? That was what I wanted that, right? Or that, and that wasn't what my mom had as an idea of Mr. Right. So then what do, right? Because that's perfect. This is perfect. Mr. Right's not perfect, by the way. Yeah. And that was a big disappointment for me. In relationship after relationship after relationship, being set up that somebody was going to do it all for me and be perfect. And I never found it. I never found it. Right? Even my last boyfriend, right? He was pretty perfect. He's a great guy. We got ordained together. We did. Right? I used to say to him, best way to break up. Right? He's great. He only lasted a couple, 2.5 years as a monk, but we're still good friends. But, you know, don't set yourself up for the disappointment like that. And the, some of the healthiest relationships I know is people, they're realistic. You know, they have their feet on the ground and mainly love is about wanting the other to be happy. So are you supporting each other? Are you actively listening to each other? Compassionately? Spaciously? Helping that person do what they want to do, that they feel fulfilled, and they're helping, you know, speaking respectfully to each other. We deserve this. We all deserve this. We deserve to act this way, and we deserve to be acted, to be treated this way, basically. Right? Okay. And the other thing also, attachment to products, to things. It's another thing we get hooked by. Products wear out. That's their nature. Your car will break down. Your phone will lose its luster. And they'll invent something that's smarter and sharper and thinner and perfect. And then what happens is due to desire, you're going to want that. So we're in the desire realm in Buddhism. That's what they call the desire realm. And that's part of its nature, is I want, I need, I have to have. So just watch your mind getting in that space. I talk about the department store meditation. Okay? And it's really helpful. It's been very helpful for me, the department store meditation. You have department stores here, I'm pretty sure. Right? Yeah. Do you shop in them or do you just shop online now? You just department stores. Okay. So here's what goes on. When was the last time one of you was in a department store? Last week. What did you buy? What did you need? Clothes for a wedding. Okay. And what happened when you went in? Did you get what you... Okay. Looking for one dress, and she got three. Okay. Anybody else in department store?
Same exact thing. I got one dress, but I paid $3 for it. So, very close. Yes.
Okay, but you went in for the thing you wanted, and you got it. Did you get anything else?
Not that day, but I got a couple accessories, but all for the same thing.
For the same thing. Okay.
That's a long time. I almost gave up, and the last thing I tried on, I was walking out the door, and I'm like,
okay, there you go. So what happens is, the shopping mall where I used to live in California was quite a drive, so I didn't go very often. I didn't really like the department, whatever the department said, but I went in for a pair of socks. I needed socks. I knew they had good socks. I went over there. Interesting, within 20 minutes, I had several other things over my arm. But in the morning, this is a way to cut some of the desire and grasping to things. In the morning, but when I left my cabin, when I woke up in the morning, when I did my practice, or whatever I'm doing, having breakfast, right? Those things were never in my mind. I didn't even know they existed. Isn't that interesting? But and stores are designed this way. This is, you know, they're going to sell you advertising, whatever. But socks, I needed socks. Socks was clear. I had all these holes in my socks. I've been fixing them. Go over to the store. So I go, but within 15, 20 minutes, I've got, and these things, and why are they over my arm? Because they're on sale. Right? Essay, it's a really dirty four-letter word, sale. Because now I need two of them. Why? It's on sale. I'll get two. Right? So be very skillful with your mind. Protect your mind. I'm there for socks. I found the socks. So what I say to people in this meditation is, you're allowed to go in, buy the thing you wanted. If you find you had other things over your arm you're ready to buy, you're not allowed to buy those that day. Only the socks, only the thing you came in for, okay? If you go home and you realize you really need that thing that you didn't buy, you can go back the next day and get it. You really rarely ever go back. Again, it wasn't in your mind before, and soon it'll leave your mind. It's like, what do I need another jacket for? It was like, you know. Well, I wanted it because it was blue. I have a black one. That one was blue. And that's why they change fashion every year. And they change women's shoes. And they change it because they want to make money. There's nothing wrong with the shoes from last year, but once it looks like last year's style, nobody wants to wear it anymore. It's amazing. So be skillful. Be skillful like that. Yeah?
I'm taking a picture of the thing I wanted to buy. It really helps. And it's a service price.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if I have a picture of what I wanted to buy and the price, and I keep them, and then after a while I look back and I'm like, and every once in a while I do go back a month later, like, you know, that was a good, yeah.
Yeah.
But most of the stuff, I mean.
Yeah, so I would say be skillful. And this is, again, knowing your mind, what you're going to do. There's some stores that are more delectable. I have trouble in bookstores and camping stores. That's my fault. Bookstores aren't a big issue anymore. I don't really have the, you know, proper place to live to put books out, so I don't buy books. But now you can borrow books on your phone at the library and keep them. It's easier. But camping stores are always, it's always been a downfall for me. So know your thing. And then if you need to, sometimes you need to avoid certain stores. I know people with, you know, chocoholics and the chocolate store. I know they'll have samples in there. You know, let's go. But really, this is about getting to know yourself, to know the areas to protect yourself, and you have to be strong about it. This kind of practice isn't, you know, fighting attachment. So anger is the vomit on your clothes. It's disgusting, you see it, and it's quite easy to wash out. Attachment is the oil stain. It's more subtle, you know, and it's very, very hard to get out, and we often mistake it for love. Okay, the difference between love and attachment, anybody? Love is wanting the other person to be happy. Attachment is wanting me to be happy. It's all about me. So do check when you're saying something. Are you coming from a loving place, or am I trying to manipulate because I have an agenda? I want to control you. I wanted you to do this. Now sometimes it's a fine line with your kids or your partner. There's an event and you really had planned as a family to do this thing, you know. But I would just come from a genuine place with it. But we get into habits based on how our parents did things. And like when you said about, you know, my sister sometimes when her kids were younger, and one time she was yelling at her son, and then, but like really extreme, and then she just looked at me and she's like, you know, Dad just entered my body. Like, I mean, that happens. So forgive yourself, okay? It happens. We have a lot of influences like that. Yes.
I just wanted to mention that another way that my family responded with anger was to withdraw. So,
sure.
You know, it's a way. Sometimes you exaggerate the bad qualities, and you know you want to go up against it. But another way is to completely withdraw, silence, the cold shoulder. There's a lot of ways to describe it, but. You know, it's good to remember that sometimes with anger, you have to move forward out of the ice age rather than the heat of anger.
Yes, that is true. Thank you for bringing that up, because talking with a couple people yesterday, also in relationships, your intimate partnerships and relationships, it's about compromise. You know that word? It's about compromise. So you've got one partner, let's say, very fiery. And I know people that one partner wants to resolve it right away. Let's talk about it. Let's get to the bottom of this. And the other one has retreated. I need some space. What are you going to do? Okay. You compromise. Maybe one time, and you discuss it respectfully when you can. Maybe one time you do it one way, where we're going to talk about it right now, get to it. The next time, we're just going to let it go and give it some space. Tomorrow's another day. We'll forget about it. Yeah. Third time, maybe you have a compromise. Okay? We're not going to talk about it right this moment, but we're going to talk about it in 10 minutes and try to resolve it, right? You always have to compromise as couples. You can't just always get your way. And I don't know how you feel if you're the dominant one to always dominate the other. It's another thing to think about. Somebody else, everybody has a voice. Everybody has a voice. Is the voice being heard all the time? Like that. Or what is the voice saying? What's the voice saying? So I think it's true about people that retreat, sometimes responsibly is to kind of step out of that, you know. And knowing, I think, discussing with each, together with each person is, when is the timing I feel safe to step out? And when is the one who wants to talk, do I feel I need you to come out now? Is it 2 hours later? Is it a day later? Is it? So I think that's a good point about people that retreat. So let me look at the other thing is to be skillful about, please protect your mind of the influences that come in from, I would say, phenomenally commercial advertising on TV. The internet has ads as well. Most people can protect a bit more of that, but the commercial advertising on TV, we've known this for years, but it's kind of poison to your mind. You know, and you start, I need to buy this thing, I need to have a truck like that, I need to look like that to be happy. Yeah. So now you have these devices on your TV where you can skip the commercials, right? Some people have that. Not a lot of people have it. Okay, but I know if my dad sometimes will watch something on TV. I don't watch a lot of TV, but I mute the commercials. You know, sometimes I go out of the room for the commercials, something else I'm going to do, and then I come back in. So be careful, because it really starts you're feeling inadequate. And that's kind of the nature of the desire realm, is we're going to sell you, we're going to get you, we're going to grab you. There's a new way, there's a new thing we invented, like that. And also we look at, the grass is always greener. So you see somebody else's relationship, something else that they have. You don't really know anything about their mind or how happy they are. It might look good from the outside, but everybody's relationship has some issues, right? Nothing's perfect. The main thing is for me to take care of my mind, not be so focused on what she's got, what she's got. You know, just, so sometimes I'd notice that quality. If somebody has that quality, notice if you're always comparing, and because it creates a real disturbance in the mind. You can just notice it and kind of be like, I don't really need to, I need to focus on what's going on in my mind right now, not worry about that so much. Slowly, through the practice. So the source of our happiness, we have an object that we think is the source of our happiness, source of lasting happiness. This is what attachment does. So we could have a person. It could be a thing. This is the source of my happiness. We certainly remember this when we first met someone and fell in love. Those beginning days. Does anybody remember back then? Maybe not. Okay. We do remember? Okay. But you have the source initially. And I don't know if you remember, again, here's the object. And then they come up and the mouth opens and I over-embellish everything there. I love the sounds coming out of the mouth. I love the color of this material here. I love the build here, how the arm, the eye color, everything's perfect. And then what I do is, based on that and these karmic seeds projecting, they project basically, it allows me to basically vomit a projected fantasy onto the reality that's there. That's what attachment does. Do you understand? I vomit a projected fantasy because I've over-embellished. I'm not seeing what's there. I've over-embellished what is there. And now I have perfect fantasy. We will sail off into the sunset forever. And they're perfect. And then I embellish that even more analytically. And this is analytical meditation. Oh, the voice is just so perfect. And I love, and Lama Yeshe does this in a video on the Vajrasattva practice. I don't know if actually you could watch it without a high initiation, but there's a brilliant video, and he's got his mala, his rosary. And he's talking about attachment with relationship. And he's like, you know, you're so beautiful, and you're so wonderful, and it's, and you've just choked to death this thing. And a lot of people feel squeezed, like all of a sudden it's great, you're going along, and then suddenly it's like, I need my space. You know, you've just totally squeezed me with this fantasy. So we not only do it with people, but we also do it with our kids. We have expectations for our kids. So you got this projected on them. This is what they need to be. This is where they need to go to school. This is how they have to act. And we haven't even consulted them in the process. And then we do it with our stuff. And what I always found interesting was when I met my Adonis, you know, great. And it took me a long time till I ever introduced them to my friends. But I made somebody perfect, great, wonderful, the new thing, we're all in love and everything's great. And then finally I would arrange a dinner or something. We'd go out and meet a couple of my friends. And we'd have dinner. And then my friend, the person would leave. And then and then you say to your friends, what do you think? You know? Because that's perfection. So now I need to hear your agreement with that, right? You know. And my friends would say, like, he's all right. You know. And I was always so stunned. Like, what do you mean? So no inherent perfection out there. No concrete existing, for all time, unchanging, inherently existent thing out there. Because everybody would see it that way. Everybody would see perfection. And they don't. Okay, so it's one way to just understand with attachment, that's what's operating, okay? And it's the same thing with your stuff. So you get a new car, fantastic. But just understand that, you see cars. You've seen cars in junkyards. You've seen scraps of cars, right? You've seen them when they get dinged and when they get dented, and you remembered your old car. how you felt about it when it was new, but how you feel about it now. It's like, oh, and the seats are stained, and the heater doesn't work, and the, you know, and you're kind of fed up with the window doesn't go down properly. But that's how cars are. Okay. So let's just be touching reality. This is reality to understand. Okay. The other thing I noticed with attachment, and the same thing happens with aversion, the analytical meditation we do, which I said is basically moving in the wrong direction, it's on something non-virtuous, okay? The analytical meditation we do, it's such a waste of our mental energy, okay? So people say, I don't know how to do analytical meditation on the Lam Rim. I don't know how to do it. Well, you do know how to do it. You're just programmed to do it on something that isn't really effective. It's a waste of time. Because I would embellish again. Oh, I saw their eyes. I like that. And then he said that. And then when he said that. And then I laughed when he said that. And it's exhausting. And the same thing of people researching the next computer they're going to buy. How much time have you spent researching the stereo system, the cell phone, the whatever? I mean, people spend hours and hours and hours. And you're going to say you don't have time to meditate for 15 minutes a day? Really? Okay. So just be honest with yourself. It's about your freedom. This is about your freedom. This isn't about you're going to get a star on your forehead and a good mark. This is about you and your mind. Do you want to be free or do you not want to be free? I know it's hard. I know it's hard because we're bodhisattva warriors. And what happens with bodhisattva warriors is you're going up the mountain, perhaps, right? People on spiritual paths or something, you know, and it feels like everybody else is going down the mountain. Or they're just on another path. And I'm kind of like, how come everybody's going that way? Maybe I should go that way too. Meaning, you know, buying the next car, accumulating stuff, being, you know, feeling like that's it, the be-all and the end-all, I'm never going to die, I'm never, you know, being somewhat unconscious, lack of mindfulness, dissing people at work, right? Whatever, you know, whatever. If that's the norm, it's like, are we lemmings? We just want to get in line. So it's something to ask yourself. Okay, the source of happiness, I wanted to say, what happens with a true source of happiness is the more you have it, the happier you will get. That's how a true source of happiness works, like love. The more you feel love, pure unconditional love, the happier you are. And it's honestly been my experience. Okay, but again, please check. So any chocoholics in here? Okay? So my dear mom, she's passed away. She was one of the most incredible chocoholics I've ever met. And you'd bring a box of chocolates, and I'd see her almost trembling, like, oh, my God, you know. And then we were all allowed to have a piece, big box. And then I noticed that the box disappeared. It was hidden in the precious cache of where chocolate went. And nobody knew but my mom. And then what would happen is, maybe if we got to it 2 days later and said, what happened to the box of chocolates? Sometimes it would go a week and we'd forget and it would be gone. But 2 days later, we'd be like, what happened to the chocolates? She'd bring them out and there'd be like two pieces left. Okay? So chocolate, she kind of thought this is a source of happiness. But what happens, as we know, with chocolate or ice cream or pizza, the more you eat it, you get sick eventually. So it's not an ultimate source of happiness, a lasting source of happiness. It's mundane. I think we know that. Okay, but what we do is we glom some of these things on to those most intimate with us, our friends and our family, as a source of happiness. And then your child wants to move across the world, or they don't want to come to some family event, and you get totally bent out of shape. And it's like, you know, we did that with our parents, right? We didn't always want to be there. So if our kid wants to do that, how can you argue with, right? So it's just something to think about. We're, again, trying to base all this in reality so that our mind is more peaceful. So I'm just giving you different ideas about attachment. And so if the thing I was wanting, if it's a product, if it were the source of happiness, I would always experience happiness when I have it. Okay? But you get the newer cell phone. Does that make you happy all the time? The new car? The new clothes, the new dress, the piece of jewelry that you wanted, the shoes, the running shoes. Sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm not. So if I don't have them, is it really that big of a deal? I'm going to make that much of a difference? So one attachment I want to mention is attachment to the Dharma, okay, is probably better than being attached to worldly things. Attachment to pursuing a spiritual path, probably better, as Holiness would say, than be attached like that. If you're going to be attached to something, be attached like that. But again, within balance, within balance. Some people get in contact with Buddhist teachings, let's say, or a new spiritual path, and they get so excited, and then they come home, and I've seen this, I've heard this happen with people, and then suddenly the father of the family, I'm going to go off to a monastery and become a monk. And you got three kids, like, it's not realistic. Or I'm going to go, and then suddenly every weekend I want to go to the center, and I want to do this thing, and you're kind of neglecting some family obligations you might have. So again, please do it within balance. Because you have family commitments as well that you signed up for. So you can't just neglect that. You can't neglect your job. But there is a way that you can, that raw energy when you're new to practice is quite exciting, I found, as well. So in a sense, what about attachment to spiritual teachers? Gurus like that. So one thing is great to have respect and devotion after checking the teacher out and making sure, you know, are they really walking the talk like that? But you don't want to be obsessive about them and be hounding them. And I've seen in some countries, I attended this great Lama for 2 years in 2004 to 2006. And actually, he was here in 1994 at the old center, the old Kadampa Center, Kirti Senchab Rinpoche. And I saw in different countries how people responded. And there were some countries where they didn't really leave him alone and they came to the door 2 a.m, people banging on the door. You know, that's too much. That's too much. So there's a way to have a nice relationship with the teacher, but realizing you can't run to the teacher for everything to ask every question. That's not what they're interested in you doing. So they give information, and then you need to kind of cook it on your own through reading, study, attending classes, learning to meditate, doing some retreats. You build your own practice and your own spiritual maturity, so eventually you become independent of them. You know, by developing your own wisdom and compassion and loving kindness, you have the tools to make your decisions like that. So it doesn't mean you might not check in with them for a little guidance and adjustment now and then, but they don't want you to be continually dependent on what should I do? Should I be with this? Should I leave my husband? Should I take this job? And, you know, certainly some life questions you can ask, but you don't want to waste their time like that. And you also do need to protect yourself from unskillful teachers. There's false, I would call them false gurus, we call them. America knows about cults. We've had a number of them here. And you need to be careful. You need to really thoroughly investigate. And they say don't take somebody as a teacher. His Holiness the Dalai Lama actually gives a period of 6 years. Check up on them for 6 years. Really check, try to see as much as you can about them. How are they living? What are they doing? What are their students like? It's another thing. So it's helpful to really take your time and don't just dive in because everybody's doing the ceremony with this teacher. Great. You know, and you're very fortunate to have Geshe Gelug here. You know, he's a great scholar for one. He's a fun person and he's a very, I think, authentic teacher. So you're very fortunate, this center. He came to Canada, he came to Milarepa Center when I was there. Maybe, I want to say 2009, I think he came up, and just for our first snowstorm in December. He wanted to see snow, and I had said, Geshe will bring clothing, like, it's not North Carolina, it's northern Vermont, and we had a big snowstorm, and he was very happy. You know, it was really a tremendous storm we had, and I had to lend him some clothes, you know, and things. It was very sweet. But he wanted to go to Canada. He'd never been. And he had his passport card, and so there were just three of us in Geshe-la, and we did a road trip for a day. Canada was 2 hours away, well, an hour away, and then we went into this French town, and we visited a Benedictine monastery, beautiful place. And we met with the priest, we did some meditation with the priest, And there was a shop, and guess what, bought some things for the center there at the shop for some friends from the center. And we had a really nice time, and we went to a cafe, and we had lunch, and it was very fun and very cold, wintry day, and we had a really nice time. I remember he really enjoyed that. Yeah. So how to live a happy life without attachment, or at least with as little attachment as possible, okay? The middle way. The Buddha taught the middle way. Okay, what does that mean? So you're not fully indulging yourself every moment, but you're also not depriving yourself every moment. I think you know the balance, right? Sometimes we deserve a treat. You want to buy yourself a top? Buy yourself a top, right? Does it need to cost $400? Maybe not. Okay? You want to have the chocolate? And Lama Yeshe would say, have the chocolate. If you eat chocolate or your favorite food, whatever it is, please enjoy it when you're eating it. How do we eat chocolate? Oh, I shouldn't. Right? I eat it with guilt. No. Then guilt goes into your body. Okay. Chocolate can be delicious if you like it. Pizza can be delicious. Ice cream can be delicious. Cake, delicious. Whatever your thing is. Okay? Oh, actually, you're the center with the very healthy tzolg offerings for the tzolg, right, at the retreat. I remember it because some people said, this is a little too healthy for us. Where's the chocolate? You know? When we have a special ceremony sometimes, and you offer, like Halloween, you give out bags of goodies. And, you know, some people, one center, they brought in malted milk balls and peanut M&Ms. And you want things that generate bliss in your mind. So, you know, sometimes dried apples don't really do that for people, okay? But no, it's nice. And one thing I do want to mention for the future, because you have time to plan and time to save, please. September 2016? So September 2016, you have a really unique opportunity about as close to here as you could get in Asheville, is Light of the Path Retreat with Lama Zopa Rinpoche. I can't stress enough how amazing the opportunity is to sit with a great Buddhist master, somebody very, very highly realized, and to sit with him for some sessions a day, and you have a senior monk or nun lead the other sessions of learning a little bit how to do retreat. It's a little rigorous, no doubt. I mean, you're getting up at 5 in the morning or something, and you're going all day into the evening, but it's a week or two. You can come for a weekend if you can't get off of work, but you have time now to plan. It's a little over a year away. And it's organized by the center. Thank you so much. It's been one of the most glorious things of my life. And I think is it the fourth year?
Yes.
It'll be the fourth year, but you just jump in. It doesn't matter. There's transcripts online of past years, but you're not missing anything. Just jump in because you get a blast of this amazing master with a giant screen behind him with someone simultaneously transcribing what Rinpoche's saying. Rinpoche can be, for some people, challenging to understand the first time you hear. So this way you just read it. There's no better setting for Rinpoche. You don't have to strain and kind of sit there. My first teacher, I didn't understand a word he said.
Yeah,
you know. 4 hours I sat. Yeah. And I was like, okay, this is the guy they said was the Buddha? I'm not getting a word of this. Okay, maybe I'm not meant to be a Buddhist, right? But I liked him. I had a really nice feeling being there. I somehow was totally like, this is somebody extraordinary. No, not a normal person. I think I got 2 sentences in 4 hours. Please come. And so please, if you can, Light of the Path Retreat, September 2016. And it's really a very unique thing. And it's a spacious room, couple hundred people, comfortable living accommodations. It costs a little bit of money. So you have time now to plan. It's well worth it. Much better than just some beach holiday. Honestly, it's very, very good for your mind. I can't recommend it enough. So I just wanted to say that. So this middle way. Here's another thing. How do I live a happy life without attachment or just a little bit of attachment? Well, he's really adorable. And so are you. Hi. Okay. Here's how to live a happy life without attachment. Developing the altruistic motivation of bodhicitta. for whatever you do. You know, so train yourself to be concerned for others. You know, do whatever you can do with a motivation to benefit others. To benefit others. Can you incorporate that into your life? So, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, I think I brought some of these. And this is a book, Bodhicitta Mindfulness. Bodhicitta, again, is the enlightened attitude. Bodhi, enlightenment. Citta, mind. The mind of enlightenment, Sanskrit word. Bodhicitta is about wanting to become a Buddha to benefit others, cherishing others, okay? And what Rinpoche does is kind of build this into your life, okay? When you put on a belt in the morning, may all sentient beings' minds, may all living beings' minds be bound by the three higher trainings. Ethical discipline, concentration, and wisdom are the three higher trainings. But get creative. Put it into, may they be bound by happiness and love. You know, put it into your own, simplify. But he's got a whole list you could put on your refrigerator. Okay? When you get dressed, think, may all beings, all living beings, wear the dress of shyness and shame. Meaning I'm conscious of not doing unethical things because of what others will think or how it will disturb their minds. It's not about being shamed. It's about conducting myself properly so I don't upset other people's minds. And, you know, when you lie down, may I bring all living beings to the sorrowless state. Okay, but again, put these in your own words, but it's every action. You know, you can walk up steps and think I'm leading all living beings out of the lower realms. You close the door. I'm closing the door to the lower realms for living beings. You see what I mean? So these are things, and you create your own examples. That Rinpoche has just given you some examples of these. When you stand up, may all living beings rise up from the ocean of samsaric suffering. Well, hey. So this way, what it's doing is it's training your mind. Yeah. If you like that, you might say, no, I don't want to do that. Please come in. There's some seats over here. Yeah. So what we're trying to do is our minds are trained right now, but if you're satisfied with how they're trained, then okay, keep going with that. But sometimes my mind is trained in, I don't like that guy. That person's stupid. That person's annoying me. I need that. That's how our minds are trained, you know. I think I'll just kind of surf YouTube for 2 hours tonight and waste some time. Okay. So if you're okay with your mind trained like that, kind of grasping and everything out there, it's everybody else's problem, I'm fine, then continue or think about some other examples. So I really like this. And this is from a full set of instructions you can find in a book, practice book, Taking the Essence All Day and Night. Taking the Essence All Day and Night. So I just want to give a few examples of that, and you can get that book from FPMT. We kind of need another day. I have all these other things I wanted to do. Uh-huh. Okay. Should we just keep going? Does anybody need a break? Are you okay? Okay. And here's another thing with attachment and desire. I do want to say the motivation is so, so important. So please try to at least get that built into your life, okay? And then I wanted to say about living a happy, healthy, balanced life without attachment. An example is, let's say you are enjoying something. You just bought a new dress. You're having an ice cream cone. You go into the movies with some friends, and you're really looking forward to the evening and having dinner. And right? Offer it. Just visualize in your mind, I'm having such a nice time right now. I'm just going to offer it to all the beings around the planet that are suffering. Yeah. And may it relieve them of their suffering right now and bring them to ultimate happiness. May they experience some of this pleasure. Not that that's going to happen, but this is an exercise of your mind. This is about mind expansion. It's about mind expansion. Okay, you understand? Like, it's possible. These things are easy. You see a beautiful sunset. You go to the beach one day. You see beautiful flowers. You have a delicious meal. Just in your mind, you can imagine it multiplying, filling all the space, relieving sentient beings' suffering. Okay, these are just ways to work with attachment. Questions about anger, attachment? Yeah.
You had mentioned that there's qualities or traits that you may pick up, like barnacles on the boat, you know, that from your current home life.
They come along with you,
right?
Yeah.
But then there's others that are imprinted on your mind. And I was wondering, how do we know the difference?
Well, the only difference would be, what I would say is, as a child, for me, I had no problem killing insects. And I probably was taught a little bit of that by my parents of, like, if you're cleaning the porch, you know, vacuuming. Like, there wasn't anything of don't vacuum any living insect. They didn't teach me that. But I had it younger than that, I think. So I think that was something I came in from a past life with, of that killing karma.
Okay.
Because I've met little kids that won't kill insects. Haven't you met kids like where they're really like, no, don't sit on the... I didn't have that as a kid. But my parents later would condone kill the bug and stuff, but as a young child, I don't remember that as much, and I think it must have come in from a past life like that.
Okay.
But also you can get reinforcement later in life where they're like, yes, we kill insects, and we kill insects, so you always get this thing that you're going to kill insects. That would be the barnacles.
Because when I would say that when people would say, why are you working on, you know, your depression, anxiety, addiction, I would always say, oh, so that I don't have to suffer through this in a future life. But I may, just, if some of it's imprinted, it's always going to be a struggle.
Not always.
Not always.
When you, because you're purifying something through that process as well, and when it eventually purifies, which it can, then you have some, it could just be this life, and then the next life you're done. Yeah.
So I have a question about how am I to avoid attachment to the Dharma, if it's possible to be attached that way?
I wouldn't say to avoid it. I would just say be realistic with it.
A balance?
A balance. Yeah, is it overwhelming my life where I'm not going to work anymore, I'm not taking my family responsibilities? That's too much. That's not balanced. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. You just mentioned three concepts: ethical, discipline, concentration, and there was something else.
And wisdom.
And wisdom. And what were you describing again?
Yes. Thank you. I was describing what's called the three higher trainings. So I don't want to confuse a lot of people, but I do know there's people at different levels here. Some of you have been studying for a while. Some are brand new. So Buddhism has the three of this and the six of that and and initially for me it was too much. I'm not a great memorizer. So I was like, well, yesterday I mentioned the three principal aspects of the path, but now there's the three higher trainings. What's that? And so what they are is they come under different groupings. The three principal aspects of the path I mentioned yesterday are renunciation, bodhicitta, and emptiness. So some similarity to the three higher trainings, okay? But the three principal aspects of the path will take you through the entire Lam Rim. So a lot of the lower scope is grouped around renunciation. You know, even renunciation and suffering, which is the first couple scopes of the Lam Rim. And then, so the three higher trainings I mentioned are ethical discipline, concentration, and wisdom. And this is also another path to get enlightened. So in order to meditate well, you need ethical discipline. And the reason is, and what I mean by that is, trying to maintain the 10 virtues and avoiding non-virtues. Okay, and these non-virtues, there's 10 of them, like a little 10 commandments are related to your body, speech, and mind. So we would avoid killing, stealing, and sexual misconduct is related to your body. We avoid lying, divisive speech, harsh speech, and gossip related to your speech. And we avoid greed, harmful intent, and holding wrong views, which are related to your mind. So from living like that and then kind of how it molts out into your life of is your mind becomes balanced and calm. And that's what you need to meditate. So if you're trying to do a long meditation retreat or something, and you've kind of, you know, you're a bit of a liar, or you're kind of somebody that, you know, you might get an entree in a restaurant, you went and had a meal, and then you realize that the wait person didn't charge you for one of the entrees that you ate and enjoyed, but you decided not to tell them. Well, that's a degree of stealing. Seriously. And we don't think, we think stealing's like stealing a car. We're not going to do that. But where we do steal is the office supply cabinet at work. Anybody raid that? I used to. Yeah. And when you take the scissors and the paper clips and you take them home and in your mind think that they're yours, that's stealing. Okay. So what happens is when you have those little ripples like that in your meditation, it's hard to meditate well. That's why ethical discipline is the basis of developing something called shine, calm abiding. Your mind stabilized on one object and you can hold it there unwaveringly. Concentration. Second of the three trainings. And then the reason you need concentration is in order to have a direct perception of emptiness, to develop wisdom, you have to have that meditative stabilization. So those are the three higher trainings. Yeah. So before I get into emptiness, I want to talk about more about depression and anxiety. And yeah.
Before you mentioned, at least I'll try to find 15 minutes today for meditation. And how would you describe the difference if I have friends that say, well, I do dance and that's my meditation, or I do art, I paint, that's my meditation. How would you describe the difference between the benefit of a sitting meditation versus something like art or writing or dance or some creative?
Yes, yeah, I do hear a lot of people say that. I do my meditation when I'm driving, they'd say. And so you know, I mean, it's good to be mindful when you're driving. You can practice when you're driving, but are you meditating? I don't think so. Okay, so this is tricky, and I wouldn't get into judging people like that, but the main thing is there's something about a meditative state that you're actually still and quiet in that state. Now, there is walking meditation that's not traditional to Tibetan Buddhism, but sometimes we do it in retreats, and it's helpful for people to move the body. But I would say art and dance and different... I know people that garden, and they call it more their therapy, like fantastic. Nothing wrong. They're beautiful, these things. It's just not formal meditation practice where you're working with a mind state internally, and then you're applying different antidotes and analyzing, or you're trying to keep the mind focused on one thing. I'll put it this way. It's not a meditation we do in Tibetan Buddhism. Like, we wouldn't call that meditation. So it's okay if they feel that that puts them into a calmer state. There's lots of things that can calm people down. And there's also people, if you have trouble, get a CD of a guided meditation. Thupten Chodron has a book that's great on the Lam Rim, and has CDs of guided meditations on it, but there's lots of stuff online. You know, and see if there's something. I know people that have anxiety, and they work with some CDs of visualizing the ocean, that you're calm. And some people found that helpful, those kind of things. So that's just my view. Yeah. So let me talk a little bit about anxiety and depression before we get to emptiness. And, you know, one thing I want to mention, let me just, along the way, if this relates to some people, jealousy. Mental factor that out of attachment to material gain, respect, or etc., is unable to bear the good things that others have. Okay? The antidote, rejoicing. I mean, one thing is you can reflect on the faults of jealousy and all that and understand it doesn't make you feel good when you're jealous and possessive. Okay? Rejoicing, though, is the easiest way to accumulate positive energy or merit. Rejoicing. This, again, you practice. I was not a natural rejoicer. I just wasn't. And I'd hear somebody got something and I'd be like... So I tried in the beginning and I'd be, you know, great. It was hard. But I practice that again and again, and so now I hear some good thing happen to somebody, it comes naturally. Because I also noted when it wasn't automatic and I wasn't happy, I wasn't happy. When I felt kind of like, it's a little space of mind for me. So I didn't like that anymore. I didn't want to be there. So I just practice, and this, the mind can change. Possible. So rejoicing is really, really powerful. So every winter, if you remember this, every winter, our winter from, I'm going to say October, November, December, January, sometimes February, 4 to 5 months, there are people in Bodh Gaya, India, which is where the Buddha got enlightened, and I hope you can visit one day if you haven't. I often lead pilgrimages there. So there are, has Geshe-la done a pilgrimage and taken people to India? I wonder, because we could go to India if you want to, and if you ever want to do a fundraiser like that, we could raise money for the center and we could get a group and go to visit the Buddha sites in India and Nepal. I do this often, I've led this often. So anyway, if there's any interest, you can let me know. What's that? Let's go. We're ready. Okay. We're going. Kim and I are going. So if you want to join us, we're going to be on our way. So so the thing with rejoicing, there's people that go there just to do Buddhist practice because the Buddha got enlightened. It's a very, very precious place for Buddhists. Okay? And there's a lot of people making full-length prostrations there as what's called one of our nundro, preliminary practices. And these preliminary practices sweep away negative energy for us. And they're very, very powerful. I've done a lot of them. Really powerful for the mind. But they're rigorous and they're hard and they're not for everybody. Some people are like, are you crazy? But there's a lot of devoted people there doing these prostrations. So if you think about them doing that and you rejoice, you get a lot of merit just for sitting on your butt and rejoicing and be happy that they're doing this practice. It's amazing. If you think about all the people that will go to the Light of the Path retreat, if you can't go, doesn't mean you can't go. Go, okay? But if you think about all the people doing there and making time in their schedule, taking off of work, paying the money, and getting up early in the morning and doing that, and you feel like how wonderful that they're there doing that, it's good for your mind. Okay, so rejoicing is a really powerful thing. Antidote to jealousy also. Antidote to anger as well. Cultivate loving kindness. Whether you do a visualization, you know, whether you superimpose the person you feel jealous about, somebody you like, and you get all those loving feelings towards that person, very powerful in cutting the negativity. So, and here's the thing in relationships, jealousy in relationships, possessiveness in relationships. If somebody really doesn't want to be with you anymore, to perpetuate that is just really painful for both of you. Are you rejected? Seriously? You know? People change. People have different interests, and there's also karma. You know? You've probably broken up with people before in the past, sometimes with regard, sometimes with no regard. You know, when we were younger, things like that. So these happen. There was a woman I know in our community, after 30-some years, her husband said he didn't love her anymore, left her for another woman. And that woman, she had house in her house during a retreat that her husband brought up once. I mean, it was really bizarre. He left her for this woman. These are Buddhists. Buddhists do this, okay? We're not perfect. We're not Buddhas. We're Buddhists, right? Okay? And she was about 50 years old and just flattened, just shredded. She, you know, and she talked to Rinpoche, and Rinpoche said, the first thing he said was, what did you expect? This is samsara. Yeah, so we don't think about that with relationship, but there's going to be a level of suffering in it. And he's like, what did you think? You're just going to waltz off into the sunset, happy forever? It's just not like that. Doesn't mean you can't enjoy your relationship. You know, and really, you know, I've seen some great relationships. You know, so nice, I was thinking last night, such a harmonious family, my friend's family. It's just so nice to pleasant, you know. And so, you can do that, but be realistic. So he just said to her, and she said it was a real wake-up call for her. She's like, I never thought about, like, the suffering and samsara that this is. And then he said, in past lives, she had done this to him. Like, it's, you know, so she's finishing something else. So it's just a different perspective than we're normally thinking. He's rejected me, he's left me, he's a jerk, I'm alone, I'm, you know. So she had some other things to work with, of like purifying negative karma, and it really shifted things for her. And then she ended up really getting into her practice. He was always the practitioner. She never showed up, and all of a sudden she's a great practitioner. She teaches, she's amazing. She's amazing. Okay. Let me do a quick thing on pride. Pride is a mental factor, if pride and arrogance are your thing, that grasps at a wrong conception of I and mine. It exaggerates their importance and leads us to feel high and superior to others. So again, you can reflect on the negativities of pride, the disadvantages, and you know when you're around arrogant people, it's uncomfortable. You know, what do they think they're so great for? And they're sometimes a little bit alienated from others. Okay? So, antidotes to pride, remind yourself of what you don't know, the qualities you don't have. Remember your faults and imperfections. Okay? Think, as long as I'm in samsara, my mind is full of delusions and karma. So what is there to be proud of? The different ways like this, remembering impermanence, that things change and I could lose everything I have. I could become ill, I could lose my status. Like that. Okay. Depression, let me go into depression a bit. So depression, it becomes manifest in thoughts such as, I am so inferior that I could never attain any insight or liberation, and I'll just translate that into, I'm unworthy and I'm worthless and useless and hopeless. Okay? It can be a needless self-indulgence based upon a depreciation of your own potential. In depression, there's a lot of sitting in the mind. Okay, I had periods of depression in the past. A lot of self-absorption was going on. And then what it'll do is molt into some other patterns. So I was in a workaholic tendency at the time. So I couldn't really see beyond my own scope. The work gave me value and identity. I did a good job, but I just poured everything into that. So I had no balance in my life. You know, and I would feel underappreciated unless I just kept working, because that's where I felt like that was all. It just doesn't work that way. It's not healthy that way at all. And then it comes out with sayings of, I'm hopeless, I'm ugly, I don't deserve to be loved, nobody cares about me. You know, always be depressed. Okay? So here's some antidotes. Examine what your mind is saying. Examine what your mind is saying. You have to sit down quietly and analyze. Is it correct what your mind is saying? Are you worthless? You're not, as long as you have a precious human rebirth. Not at all worthless. Okay? But you just tell yourself that because you've told yourself that before. Does nobody care about you? Really? Okay? I care about you. Lama Zopa Rinpoche cares about you. Geshe Gelug cares about you. You might not have a personal relationship with them, but I know that for a fact from my own experience. Okay? I never do anything right. Examine that. Is that true? Depression wants to keep you prisoner in I never do anything right. Nobody cares about me. That's the prison of depression. It's a very small space. Okay? So again, you have to again and again watch the tape come up. I did this for some years, but watch that get access, that thing, and then you either pop the bubble, but it's not accurate. It's not all of who I am. So you really have to struggle back from that. It's hard in the beginning because you're very easy to go into that trench, okay? And you can replace, I talked about thought replacement yesterday, replace the thoughts with something positive and realistic. This is your practice, like a mantra. I do have some good qualities. I do have good qualities. I do have good qualities. I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm good enough. Right? Everybody in this room, we're good enough. Just the way we are. In fact, sometimes I actually think, I know you're going to think this is kind of nuts, I actually think that the universe is actually quite perfect, just the way it is. We're exactly where we need to be at every moment that we are. Okay? But what happens is we're not present in that. So I'm over here trying to fix this. I'm thinking about this. I'm trying to make this agenda. And I'm missing, right now, just riding along like this, if I stayed present and realized the potential I have, everything is really okay. I know there's suffering on the planet. I'm not negating that at all. But there is a space of, if we kind of get ourselves out of the way, it's really everything is okay. All the answers are there, all the tools that we need. But again, thought replacement. Put it in your own words. I'm good enough. I'm good enough. I'm good enough. You can make your own mantra. Okay. From anxiety once in my life at a center, I had a mantra for a year. I try to say it as much as I could. Let go, let go, let go, let go, let go. It was very helpful at times. So make your own mantra of what speaks to you. Okay? And then a lot of people depressed need to work on cultivating acceptance, love, and compassion for yourself. That's news to people depressed. Cultivating acceptance, love, and compassion for yourself. Please do that. You deserve it. You're a good person.
Could you expand on how?
Yeah, so part of it could be in a formal meditation practice, some of the exercises I mentioned of a light, visualizing light rays, and getting into some practice that you feel is building. Another thing could be what kind of things make you happy. Some depressed people have no idea. Totally detached from that. Okay, but little treats, and it could be, when I say little treats, maybe you like taking baths. Have a bath once a week. Get some nice something you like to put in the bath. Okay? Maybe you like to go out and walk in nature. I find that really cuts depression. And a lot of depressed people I know spend too much time in front of the computer screen or the TV. That lends to depression. Okay? So can you make a date with yourself, whether it's I would recommend once a week, making a date that you do something fun that you enjoy for yourself, even if it's alone. Whether you go to a museum, you go to your favorite cafe and have a really yummy coffee. You know, and you really enjoy it though. You're really like, I have the advantage to go buy this nice, yummy, frothy drink. How great. Many people in the world can't do that. But I can do it and I can sit in this nice cafe and I can get my newspaper and do my crossword puzzle or whatever some treat, but really enjoy it when you're in it. When you're in it, don't let the looping thoughts like, I'm wasting time on, no, I'm having my coffee. Like a normal person here, this is great. I'm having my bath. I'm going for a run. Physical exercise can be really helpful for depression and anxiety, particularly depression. Find some kind of physical thing, whether it's just walking, great. Too hot outside, yoga classes, some kind of other martial arts class people do. Do you like that? Some kind of treat. Who do you like to spend time with? People, do anybody lift you up you like to spend time with?
I like to see live bands very much, but I don't have a whole lot of money. And I used to belly dance. I love that, but I no longer afford it.
Right, but I bet there's probably this summer festivals with live bands that are offered for free. They have those in most places that I know. So maybe you could go to something like that. And some of them have a smaller cover charge. So maybe it's not the top band, but it's some other fun band. If that gives you pleasure, go and do it. Go and enjoy it. So it's finding those little things, but it has to be balanced with practice so that you're getting into your mind to realize, oh, here's a trigger. This is going to send me downhill. So you know what? I'm going to choose through my wisdom. I think it's better that I don't go with those people tonight because they always make me feel undervalued or unappreciated, or I feel like they're doing really well and I'm not. So make a break. You know, and at centers you can make new friends and you find people that are on a similar path. And initially that's harder, but it's totally possible. Is that possible?
Yes. I can hear the stones in my front yard for free.
Oh, the stones. Yeah, the stones are coming. The stones are still coming. You know, I can't believe they're not dead now. I mean, sorry. We were just talking this morning, Kim and I. I'm like, I can't believe they're... Keith Richards. How is he still alive? What kind of karma? The man is like, he's on his like 15th life, isn't he? I mean, do they just prop him up out there? I don't know how he's still going. I'm just amazed by that. They're good for them, you know, right on. It's amazing, 50 years later. Amazing. So does that, you sound like there's a but after what? It sounds like there was...
I didn't get the joke at first, but I realized that's awesome. You can hear it from her yard, and you don't have to look at them.
But do you think it's possible? It sounded like you were like, yeah, I could do that, but... So depression is going to take a big...
And
chronic depression is hard. It's a big looper. You really... So here's another thing I suggest people to do that are depressed. Volunteer. When you give to somebody else and do something good for somebody, it's really hard to stay in that. Well, one of my depressions, you know, Washington, D.C. in August is enough to make anyone depressed, right? The weather is just... I mean, you have hot weather here as well, and... I remember this thing, but finally I was in this like little spin down just because I was working too much for a couple months. And then my neighbor upstairs, an old woman, needed help with her groceries, and unconsciously I just came home at the same time and I just picked them up and said, oh, you know, I'll take them up. And I just noticed how suddenly I was like, well, that felt good. But, you know, and then the next day I bought her flowers. You know, it was just, so these are little things. This isn't even any volunteer program. This is just, and I said to her, hey, let me know if when you need milk or something, I can go and get eggs or, like, just anything that got me out of my me, myself, and I. Because, so volunteering is a huge thing, whether it's a once-a-week thing or you say to somebody, I've got 5 hours a month. There's many, many programs that need help, that need you to, whether you're licking envelopes or you just show up and answer the phone for an hour. It just... It's so good to give back. It's a huge thing if you can do something like that. Now, there are, for chronic depressions, people take medication. And honestly, there's some physiological imbalances people have with depression and anxiety. So if it helps you a little bit, but some of the depression medications have side effects, and some of them you have to be on for a year, or there's danger in coming off sooner that it can plunge you into more of a depression. So do work with a skilled doctor, please, about that. If you need to take a medication, sometimes it can help just to get you going, but I wouldn't recommend staying on it forever and try, you know, I would really, that's why I would do a little bit internal work and then try to figure out what are the things that make me happy, that make me feel worthwhile, meaningful. Try to cultivate what gives you meaning in life. It can be hard when you're depressed.
Early. If you woke up early, the world changes because you feel that you're taking control of your life instead of depression taking control of yourself. And what I do is just get out of the bed, even if I don't want to, and try to do my yoga practice. For me, what it works better is the pranayama practice, just breathing and meditation. That's really great. And what you were saying about do things that you really want to do for others. Because depression, in my case, is just about my ego controlling myself. So I just say to my ego, okay, go away. I'm going to help other people. And that's really working so good for myself. So, yeah. And go to sleep. Sleep is really helpful. So you need to go to sleep early and woke up early. That's what's working for myself.
I couldn't say it better. Thank you. No, seriously. I've noticed myself, I'm a night owl. I'm just somebody that gets going at night, and I'm not a real morning person. But in the summer, I like to go to bed earlier, to get up earlier, because it's early light, and it's cooler, and it's really made a difference. I really notice how much more dysfunctional I feel during the day. It's something you can do if it's different than your... What happens with a lot of late-night people and they've done some studies on this now, is you're late night and you got the TV on, you got your iPad, your phone. These things are not great to help you sleep at all. And they're even doing things saying, get off of the technology 2 hours before you go to bed. I tend to read before I go to bed. It's a great one. You know, you just start going to sleep. And it really has made a difference, I notice, when I go to sleep earlier as opposed to when I go to sleep later. And you get more sleep, most probably, because there is a lot of light in the morning now. So if you go to bed earlier, if it naturally wakes you up, you've at least gotten some sleep. You could try that. Thank you. Yes.
I find for myself and many other people that I come in contact with that sometimes extended periods of pain from physical illness cause depression. And what do you do about that except accept it? And that doesn't seem to work real well.
Yes. So this is a real hard one with chronic pain. Part of it is there are some pain meds, and they're not great to be on them long term. But if it gives a little bit of relief, that one thing would be to figure out, is there anything you can do about fixing the pain? If you can't, part of it is accepting. And there's some meditations you can do that can shift the pain that I mentioned yesterday. You know, focusing on the pain. Where is the pain? How big is it? What color is it? Does it have a shape? Is it solid? Is it lighter? And can you move it? And sometimes that helps a little bit. And then I would say Vajrasattva practice. It's probably one of the most powerful things. Also, Medicine Buddha practice. Do they do that once a month at the center? You do Medicine Buddha practice. I would show up. If you have depression, anxiety, pain, you need to be at that practice once a month. It's very it's powerful. It's usually a practice that takes about 45 minutes. Or you read it in English. And you have a Medicine Buddha here, right? There's one over there. The blue lapis lazuli is a healing stone. You see the dark blue? Buddha on the left, okay? So he's very powerful, and the more you can relate to these beings as if they're really there, there's a Medicine Buddha right there, as if they exist just to help us with that. So I would recommend that practice. It's also good to do next to somebody's bed if they're in the hospital dying or sick or after someone has died. That's one of the main practices we would do. And Vajrasattva practice, I can't recommend enough. Both of those are very, very powerful. And sometimes that's the best you can do. Okay, let me just go through a few more of these. Another antidote to depression is appreciating your human life, a meditation on precious human rebirth. So the gratitude is a little bit we've been doing. You know, really reflect individually on all the incredible things you have in your life. Okay, and then your good qualities. And your mind, the mind of depression is going to want to go off and distract it with, I'm no good, I'm worthless, I'm, thanks very much. Just like she said, thank you very much, the negative part of my ego, I don't need you right now. I hear you, but I'm going to put you over there. And you know what? Schedule when you're going to deal with it. At 4 o'clock on Thursday, I'm going to give you attention. And you can put it in your phone. Reminder. 4 o'clock Thursday comes, you're not needing to deal with. You know, you realize it's silly, but schedule it so that it doesn't interfere with your meditation that I have some good qualities and focus specifically on those. You have good qualities, right? Excuse me. I don't know your name.
Christine. Yeah, but attention is one of them.
Okay. You have good qualities, right?
Yeah, but not any that people pay
for those jobs. How about yes? Period. Not yes, but, right? You have good qualities.
Yes, ma'am, yes.
Okay, so it's a practice because the but always wants to come in with depression and anxiety. So this is an exercise. Yes, it took me a while to be like, yeah, I do have some good qualities. And it's okay for me to say that. I'm not telling you I'm the greatest thing on the earth. I'm just saying I have some good qualities. I'm not bragging and boasting that I'm better than you. It's just we all have good qualities. Period. I don't need to demean myself anymore, but I'm okay. Right? You're good enough, right?
I,
you have to start where you are. My mantra is that when I accidentally out loud say, I hate myself, that I add the word sometime at the end. And I'm very proud of that because I'm doing well with that.
So I would recommend you read Sharon Salzberg, Loving Kindness. Sharon Salzberg, please, everybody read Loving Kindness. It's a beautiful book. She's a great teacher. Okay? Sharon Salzberg, Loving Kindness. It came out some years ago. She's leading a metta retreat. She's leading a retreat on loving kindness. She gets a call. Somebody died. She has to go to the funeral. She has to leave the retreat early. She's packing in her room. She knocks over a glass and breaks it. She's the teacher leading the loving kindness retreat. Knocks over the glass and she says, oh, you're so stupid and I love you. Okay? That's loving kindness. That's loving kindness. It's okay. You broke the glass. It happens. And she laughed. And so again, you know, sometimes the demeaning words come up and I love you and I'm okay. And then eventually those will silence. The negative will silence. And I broke a glass and I'm okay. You need to practice that, okay? Please practice that.
What about that concept of fake it till you become it, working not only physically but emotionally?
Yeah, I think absolutely. You're forcing a little bit. You're noticing the negative thoughts still come, and you continue to apply the thing. Absolutely, that's what practice is. That's how we train our minds. Yeah. And then one day, like I said, I wasn't a natural rejoicer, and then suddenly. It just kind of hears something good happen to me. I'm like, great. You know? Yeah.
Okay.
Sharon Salzberg. S-A-L-Z, I think, B-U-R-G. She's a formidable foundational teacher in the American Vipassana movement. I think she founded Insight Meditation Society in Barre, Massachusetts, a beautiful center. She has a small house there. And she teaches around the world, and she's a lovely person, and she does a lot of loving kindness retreats. And I really recommend that book. It's a great one. Okay, let me just do a little bit more of this, so depression, think about samsara. Sometimes it sucks, life. I can't be happy all the time. I mean, it's just like that. Let's be realistic. Okay? Reflect on the nature of your mind. Okay? How your unhappy, depressed thoughts and feelings, they're not physical, they're impermanent, like clouds in the sky. It may affect you physically, absolutely, but basically those thoughts and things are non-physical, impermanent, and they're like clouds in the sky. That's all. I don't need to make any bigger drama about them. I can let them go. Watch them come. Sometimes they're really heavy. Uh-huh. But that's all. That's not my mind. Your depression is not permanent. Okay? Was there a time before you felt depressed? What's your name? Sorry. What's your name?
Christine.
Christine.
I know it's been since childhood. As early back as I can remember, I have had it. On and off.
Yeah, so it can just be something. Okay, but you said on and off times you don't have it. So it's good to reflect on that it's not always there. Yep. Okay. Let's move on a little bit because we're out of time. Oh my, I haven't even talked about emptiness, so we need to do a little bit more. Fear, worry, and anxiety. Okay, you ready for this? The root fear is a misconception of ourself. Misapprehension of ourself and a wish for things to not change. Okay? And from this arises attachment to what is pleasant, fear of separating from what we hold dear, aversion and fear of the unpleasant or the unwanted. Okay? So here's some antidotes with fear. Okay? Be aware of and acknowledge your fears. This is not about repressing them. I'm okay, you know. Okay? What's going on? Okay, what are you afraid of? And again, reflect on samsara. Well, sometimes there's scary things in the world. You know, we do need to be aware and cautious, sensible. Absolutely. Okay? So accepting sometimes the nature of samsara, I realize, well, sometimes I'm going to be afraid of things. I don't understand what's happening. But it's definitely possible to be free of samsara permanently. That's something you can shoot for and move towards. That is possible. So have that hope behind you. Okay? An antidote to fear is courage. Courage. And this is developed by facing your fears. Okay? So part of it is understanding the nature of your fear. Who has like anxiety and fear and things like that, worry? Many people, right? Okay. Is it reasonable to have this fear? Anybody want to name a fear? Being trapped in a small place. Being
trapped in a small place
and... I'm just very afraid for the safety of my child. Sure. Around your kid. Okay. Being trapped in a small place. Okay. Is it reasonable to have this fear of being trapped in a small place?
Sometimes.
Sometimes it often happens to you? Has it happened to you?
Yes.
Has happened to you? And your child, some problems?
Sometimes.
Some things have happened, yep. Okay. Okay, so you're kind of analyzing and going, some things I need to take care, some things I need to watch out for. Is there anything you can do to prevent this unwanted thing from happening or minimize the chances of it happening, of any danger to your child or being trapped in a small place? Some things you can do to prevent any... Okay. You do those, right? You're going to do those? After that, nothing else you can do, right? Okay. Except let go of the worry that drags on and the remnants of the worry. Because if you're doing everything you can do, you know, and we know in this culture you can't protect your kid from everything. And all you can do is your best. If you're doing your best, you can't do any better, can't do any more, you know. So it is scary raising a kid these days. There's a lot of fear. So kind of acknowledging there is some concern. You're going to do the best you can do. Can I practice letting go? That's harder. Can I practice letting go? So I watch the fear arise. I might even ask myself, I have done everything I can do, and pop that thought. Let the cloud go. You know, and just celebrate the good times that you have with your child and who they are. Celebrate when you're not in a small space. Okay? Some of these are hard working with, okay? Let me go through another. Okay, done. His Holiness always says it. If something I can do, do it. If nothing you can do, let it go. But the letting go is hard for people. So we have to practice. We have to really look at nothing else I can do. Why loop the anxiety? Okay. But some people have anxiety from birth and it's from a past life and they have a lot of panic attacks and it's serious. It's intense. Okay. Here's one. Cultivate the practice of taking refuge. Proper refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha we talked about the last couple of days. This is an infallible source of support for you. Now, some of you don't have a relationship with that yet, but you can study some of the qualities. Understand some of the qualities. So years ago in California, I had a flight to the East Coast. And in the old days, I called back to confirm, and they said my reservation was canceled. I didn't cancel it. But somehow, so whatever it was, we went back, and I said, I didn't cancel it, and they found the reservation. Okay, they put it back on. Done. So I called back a few days later. It had been canceled again. So I went to Reba Rinpoche, who was living in California at the time, one of my teachers, and I got a little concerned. I thought, maybe I shouldn't be on this flight. You know, sometimes there's a message from the universe, like they're trying to, you know. And so I remember I went to him, and I don't usually ask questions like that to the teacher, but I just said, I don't know, Rinpoche, should I do this flight? Should I fly? And he just dismissed it and said, if you have proper refuge, it doesn't matter if the plane crashes. And then I realized that I didn't have proper refuge. You know, he really nailed it about finding an infallible source of protection for more suffering for you. That's what they're there for. And it really does work, but we have to develop a relationship with it. And that's hard for us. So you can read the qualities. The Buddha's free of all fears. Well, that's pretty cool. I'd like to be there. You know, and having an omniscient mind, an all-knowing mind, that would be enormously helpful. And that's a mind that I know when I go to Lama Zopa Rinpoche, he knows, capital K, knows all about my mind and what's best. And I have faith in that from my own checking and my own experiences to know that. And it's a great place because I have faith. I can go to him, I can, and you know, he'll give me some kind of guidance that will sort it if I apply myself, you know, to whatever he's advising. Okay, so think about the practice of taking refuge. You can ask more people here about taking refuge, and Geshe-la like that can give refuge. Think about karma, the law of cause and effect. Sometimes there's fear and anxious and worry stuff that's in my mind stream from before this life, if you believe in that, if you believe in past lives. Actions in previous lives, like that. Yeah. People say, if you were attacked by a dog in a past life, no wonder you'd have a fear of dogs in this life. It's natural. So sometimes I just look at that, wow. Yeah. Maybe something happened to a child in a past life of yours. Maybe you were locked in some small room and it comes up. But just acknowledging it is kind of releases it a little bit. Okay, but that's not a lot of my experience this life. More of this life, I'm not in a trapped small room. Like that. More of this life, my kid is mostly okay, right? Like that. The ultimate fear is death. And I would even say dying with your mind not prepared, with a lot of regrets. That's a worry for a lot of people. So what it tends to do is that could decrease some of the other worries we have when you put it in perspective. Yeah. One woman came to one thing. She was worried about her son flunking out of high school. He wasn't doing well. But a bigger worry was if her son had some kind of life danger. You know, when she thought about that, she was suddenly like, oh, we can do something about him flunking out of high school. We can get tutoring. We can get the thing, you know. Suddenly it just decreased, put it in perspective. Can you put the fear or anxiety in perspective? Some people with chronic anxiety, which comes over from previous life, is very hard. We worked with a woman at our center, young woman. She said she was anxious since she could ever recall. And so every day I worked with her, and like some of the anxieties, with her, I think long-term therapy would be helpful because some of the anxieties, I said, so what's happening today? I think I got Lyme disease. No, she thought she had rabies. She told me, I think I got rabies. And I said, okay, we're in northern Vermont. I said, were you bit by an animal? No. Okay. Were you bit by any kind of rabid animal that you thought was rabid? No. Well, you know that's how you get rabies. Did anyone inject you with any kind of serum that might have been infected? No. And she didn't do anything like that. Wasn't. So, you see what I mean? Her mind just got, it was used to looping through something unfounded, completely unfounded. I said, you know, that's the only way you get rabies. She said, I am aware of that, but I'm totally freaked out right now that I got rabies. First of all, they have very little rabies in Vermont. I told her that as well. That, you know, but sometimes that looping mind, you need other methods to go in there, like that. When your mind gets caught in the looping, in anxiety, recite mantras or prayers or meditate. Do a Vajrasattva practice. Prostrations to 35 Buddhas. Get into your body. Go out for a walk, but move it into your practice. Medicine Buddha, very, very powerful for anxiety. You could recite mantras. The mind, again, I mentioned thought replacement. Thought interruption. Om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum. Yeah, I'm really nervous. Om mani padme hum, om mani padme hum. And visualize the Buddha of, that's the mantra of the Buddha of compassion. Visualize him on your crown and radiant light of compassion's washing through you. He feels compassionate for you. Compassion is wanting to free you from your suffering. He would like to free you from suffering. Just visualize as you recite the mantra, it's just washing the anxiety away. Sometimes it helps a bit. These are just different antidotes. Okay? Keep a balance in life. Can you avoid the extreme of excessive worry? Okay? And the extreme of being irresponsible? Find that balance for some people. That works. So, we're out of time. But the main antidote, I must say, and sorry I've gone over a little, the main antidote is emptiness, realizing emptiness. So I just want to give you a very brief, I'm sorry this is too brief, but when I say emptiness, the nature of reality, things, what emptiness means is a lack or absence of inherent nature. And you're going to say, what's inherent nature? Inherent nature is that concrete, solid, independent existence, something existing from its own side with its own character. And these are all words that are foreign to us, that are hard for us to understand. Because our culture, we've never had this before, and I haven't found it in any other spiritualities, the concept of emptiness. Many other things permeate other spiritualities. Jesus was teaching loving kindness. It's the same. But emptiness I haven't really found. And this is the source of our suffering. So it's an absence of that. What happens is we hold ourselves as very solid, concrete, independent of any causes and conditions that got us here, independent of any parts, and independent of a mental concept that makes us solid and existent. So let me explain these in relation. I'll just take a pen in relation. Okay, the way this pen got here, and if I hold this up, first of all, we have a conventional agreement about this, would you say? So we agree this is a pen, correct? Anybody in here know? Okay, we're together on that. And what you want to do in emptiness is analyze how things exist, particularly in relation to yourself. But you can take self and you can take phenomenon, okay, or phenomena. But with the pen, there's causes and conditions that created the pen to be here. And what I mean by that is, in ancient days, people started writing. And then it developed into ink and inkwells, and you know, slowly it evolved. And eventually plastic was invented, and eventually somebody had a factory and said, I think I'm going to mass produce some plastic pens and I'll make money. And that's how the pen, that's a cause and condition of the pen getting here. All of those things. Is everybody with me? Okay. Another way the pen exists, so it depends on causes and conditions. It didn't just pop in here from outer space, okay? Another way is it depends on its parts. I'm going to label the parts of the pen. Well, this is one of my favorite pens, Bic pen, okay? It's got a top. It's got the little ink thing. You know it has a cartridge with ink. It's got plastic. Okay, it's got this thing in the end. These are all the parts of the pen. I'll even go into saying top, bottom, sides. Okay, everybody with me? Parts of the pen. Okay? And then what happens in the highest school of Tibetan Buddhism, you're studying tenets with Geshe-la, some people? Maybe not, I think a few people. Anyway, it's a great class. It goes to the philosophical schools. It's very valuable to study. The highest school, which is the way Lama Zopa Rinpoche always teaches, how the pen exists, okay, there's data here that my sense faculties take in. In this case, I'll say sense faculties of visual eye consciousness. I see this plastic cylindrical tube that's filled with ink that writes. I'm going to call it that. That's the raw data. Okay, there's even rawer data, but I'm just going to take it down to that, a plastic cylindrical tube filled with ink that writes. Is everybody with me? Following? Okay. My mind takes in the data. My mind, as Amy Miller with My Karmic Seeds, right, takes in that data, and then there's a gap. Okay? And what happens in the gap is there's a labeling process that goes on from my mind after I see the data. And for somebody in this part of the world with my language, I then put a label, a concept, a mental concept, from my mind on to this base, okay, and I label it pen. And then the pen comes into existence, okay? But it's based on a mental concept, on a valid basis of designation. The valid basis of designation is a plastic cylindrical tube filled with ink that writes. My mind takes that data, synthesizes it based on my karmic seeds and propensities I've imprinted in my consciousness. Okay. And what happens is then there's a label put onto it. Okay. But I miss the gap that there's a labeling process. Okay. And I miss the gap because my ignorance covers over the gap. Okay. And what happens is what appears to me is once it's labeled, a solidly existing pen appears for me from all time. Because I've missed that there's a valid basis of designation, and then my mind adds a label onto that, and then pen arises. It arises in dependence on the mental label. It arises in dependence on its parts. It arises in dependence on the causes and conditions. Is everybody following so far? What happens, my ignorance covers over the gap of the labeling, and then I suddenly, what appears to me is a concretely existing pen unchanging. That's not really the problem. The problem is, when I grasp onto it, mine. So my car, my kid, my computer, my clothes, you know, and you dent my car and I get upset. You threaten my child and I go ballistic. That's the problem. That's the source of the suffering. Because I misunderstood how my child exists, how my car exists. Okay, and take your child, who's the most precious thing in the world to you, no doubt, okay? But my child exists as it's got a torso, fleshy thing, arms and legs, a body and a mind is my child. And when your child came out, and what's your child's name?
Sebastian.
When he, did you have him at home or in a hospital?
In a hospital.
And when he came out in the delivery room, did everybody in the room say, oh, it's Sebastian? No. Because Sebastian doesn't exist inherently. If he did, he'd come out in the delivery room and everybody would know it as Sebastian. But what came out was baby boy. Then you put a mental label on him of a name, and suddenly it takes form. It's a solidly existing my son, my child, right? But you need to protect your children. You need to take care, and you do these things, but other things will happen. How disturbed do you want your mind to be? If your child is sick, if something threatens your child, you don't want any of those things to happen, but life happens. And on a mundane level, when your car gets dinged in the parking lot and you see somebody, a fender bender, somebody cuts you off, why are you upset? Because we think we exist concretely as the center of our universe. We forget there's an interrelation between everybody. And the only reason we're here is due to the kindness of others. But we walk around like we're our own solid little entity, particularly Americans. We have a lot of space in our country. Asians are different. And where were we, Kim, talking about in China? You know, they have a lot of people in China. The most. India's second. And when you're there, they just kind of molt and bend with each other. It's amazing. I mean, they'll crush you when you're trying to get a ticket, but everybody kind of just jostles along. In America, you can't touch people when you're in line. God forbid. Okay, but I've learned a lot from my Asian sisters and brothers that there's a lot of people and we need to figure out how to get along. So what happens is the more I can, and this is a longer process, we don't have time, I'm so sorry, I need like another day because I wanted to do all these other things as well. And I just want to close with one meditation, so a brief meditation. But please take some time to study emptiness. You can read it in the basic Lam Rim books. There's some books just on emptiness. Start with a small one, please. Slowly read, okay? Ask Geshe-la questions. Try to study. We could come back and have a course on emptiness or something. It's really the crux of... So then try some meditation on emptiness. I recommend Venerable Sangye Kadro, How to Meditate. I think it's in the bookstore. Excuse me. How to Meditate. She's our longest-term nun in our tradition. She's a good friend, American. But the book is Kathleen McDonald. It's her English name, American name. How to Meditate has a very nice emptiness meditation. Just try that. It's radical from anything you've ever heard. So initially I didn't quite get it. But slowly understanding we exist dependent on other things. We're not just concretely here. So something threatens this, karma's involved. There's imprints in me that created this to happen. For me to respond compassionately, gently, is what harmonizes the planet. That's how we respond as Bodhisattva warriors. So please try. I just want to do a little loving kindness meditation just to close. It is another helpful way to cut negative tendencies. And it's quite simple. So just relax, please. Find that comfortable meditation posture. And just bring the awareness to the breath. Visualize a replica of yourself seated in the space in front of you, facing you. Just visualize as best as you can. Sometimes the basic thing to work with our negative tendencies is just to practice some loving kindness with ourselves. So send these four wishes over to yourself to the front visualization and imagine in your heart center, you seated here in the room, is again that seed of that healing light, that special nectar that comes from all of your good qualities. It could be whatever color you like, and imagine it growing and spreading through your entire body. Imagine it penetrating all of your thoughts, ideas, and mental experiences, till the mind and body are pervaded with this radiance. Pure, unconditional love. Wishing yourself to be happy. You deserve this. And imagine this radiance is spilling out now from every pore, and it's flowing across the front visualization of yourself. And imagine it melting into the crown of your front visualization, filling up that entire being as you send these wishes. Just think for a moment. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be free from suffering. May loving kindness manifest throughout your life. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be free from suffering. May loving kindness manifest throughout your life. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you be free from suffering. May loving kindness manifest throughout your life. Take a couple moments. Just continue to send those wishes to yourself and feel free to put them in other words if you like. Thank you. So when you have more time, you can do for longer and longer. But just imagine the front visualization more peaceful, slightly freer of some of the negative emotions. Happy, peaceful. And slowly allow the front visualization to dissolve into a radiant drop of light. And allow that drop to come to your crown and melt into you. And just think, may I be happy. May I be healthy. May I be free from suffering. May loving kindness manifest throughout my life. Please relax. So I want to thank all of you so much, and I would like to just close with a final dedication. And this is on page 32. And I'd really like to thank you for your incredible energy and your time coming here and your effort. And I ask you, please, if you could please continue somehow, and I hope we meet again. And I'd like to take all the wonderful work we've done and invest it in our really being able to put some of these techniques into action and really build a practice and be kind to yourself, okay? And may we invest it in our swift, full awakening so that we can then unlimitedly help all others. I'd also like to dedicate to Annie Margaret, who passed away, one of our nuns that I knew quite well. She passed away, I think, in Australia. And all the beings that need additional help, may they receive it instantly and for more peace on the planet right now. So we're going to read the bottom half of 32 from Master Shanti Deva. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. The blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. Forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvest. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. And cease to be afraid, and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power. May people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. I'd just like to read the long life prayers for His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And Lama Zopa Rinpoche, page 244. Ganri Ramwe Gowe Jingam De Pendang De Wamalu Chungwe Ne Chenwe Zigwang Tenzing Gatso Yi
Sape si te bardu tengyurjing.
You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serves the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjunath's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplish magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. And also for the long life of Geshe Gelug and Geshe
Sampo,
and for all the Anilas, and thank you once again to Robbie and all the Kadampa Center people, and for the people who helped organize Donna and Kim, and thank you so much for coming. Thank you very much.
Turn to page 100, please. This ground anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru for continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this is a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. May my Venerable Lama's life be firm, her white divine action spread in the 10 directions. May the torch of the teachings of Losang always remain, dispelling the darkness of all beings in three realms. Idam Guru Ratha Mandala Kam Niryatayami. These green Tara mantras. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha.